It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech. We have an all-in-studio panel today. I think you'll be able to tell the difference. Owen J.J. Stone, Odokta, sitting to my left. On my right, I've got Jason Snell from SixColors.com and Ian Thompson of TheRegister.com. It's going to be a big show. We're going to talk about, of course, the new Mac Studio. Jason has a review. I have some benchmarks. Who should buy it? Who should not buy it? Coming up. Also, we'll take a look at the display, a little bit less of a satisfying product. A Facebook deep fake of President Zelensky. Would you be fooled? And how Amazon made it harder to cancel Amazon Prime. It's all coming up next on TWiT.
Podcasts you love.
From people you trust.
This is TWiT.
This is TWiT, This Week in Tech, episode 867, recorded Sunday, March 20th, 2022. That's not a TikTok, it's a podcast. This Week in Tech is brought to you by ZipRecruiter. According to research, 90% of employers plan to enhance their employee experience this year. And if you need to add more employees, well, there's ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter's technology finds qualified candidates for your job, and you can invite your top choices to apply. Try ZipRecruiter for free today at ZipRecruiter.com/TWiT. And by New Relic. That next 9 p.m. call is just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does, and you can get access to the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data free per month forever. No credit card required. Sign up at NewRelic.com/TWiT. And by Coinbase. Cryptocurrency might feel like a secret club, but Coinbase believes everyone should be able to get in the door. Whether you've been trading for years or are just getting started, Coinbase can help. For a limited time, new users can get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at Coinbase.com/TWiT. And by ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN is like changing while leaving your window wide open. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/TWiT today and get an extra 3 months free on a one-year package. It's time for TWiT This Week in Tech, the show where we cover the latest tech news. Happy spring, everybody. First day of spring, we thought, hey, COVID's all over. Let's just bring as many people into the studio as possible. Actually, you started it, Owen J.J. Stone, Odokta, because you came to town.
I am to blame, and I appreciate the blame being put upon me.
When the doctor comes to town,
it's a party. Look at this. There's like 9,000 people on the other side of these cameras. They'll never know.
What do you call that thing on your head?
So I'm wearing a jersey that is not my own, and what happens is people know that I'm a Philly guy.
That's an NFL jersey, Howie Long.
Representing Oakland right now.
Yeah, throwback. I like it. Raiders.
And so this is the Fanatic, the Philly Fanatic with the beak nose.
Not gritty.
No, not gritty. Just the Fanatic. So this represents my Philly hood, so they know that I'm out here representing both sides. So that's
would
that's
you what call that a do-rag or just a do-band?
I think they call it a Fanatic band because of the eyes. Like when I bought it,
pull it down over your eyes just for a minute, just so we could see what it would. Yeah, it's perfect. You could be a Mexican wrestler.
Disturbing.
Yeah. If I could put my mask on and just rob someone right now, like is your studio in the studio?
Yeah,
because I will burglarize it.
Yeah, take my studio,
and
please.
That's how we'll get.
That's
that
a good look.
Good time.
Oh well. Also with us sitting to, this is so awesome. I'm so in love with this. Sitting in the studio also, Ian Thompson from TheRegister.com. We brought in all our favorites today because, let's have fun, right? Good to see you, Ian.
Always a pleasure.
Watch. Oh, I could touch him.
He's a person.
He's a person. He's not an avatar. He's not imaginary. Loved having you. It's great to see you.
Good to see you.
SixColors.com, a guy's probably pretty busy right now, Jason Snell.
I barely fit at this table. There's so many people at
it's
it.
It's huge.
I know. I once hosted an episode of either TWiT or Mac Break Weekly where I was the only human being in here, and it was all boxes. And
welcome to my life
for the last two years. It's terrible. It's very disconcerting to not have humans around you.
Much harder. People don't understand. I mean, because the sound quality is good, and if you're only listening, and even with the avatars, you almost feel like somebody's there as you're watching at home. But what you're missing is there's no interpersonal communication. There's no body language.
You can't just sort of toss ideas backwards and forwards. I found this in the office environment as well. One of the things the pandemic has really shown up is the real failings of video and IM as a way of, you know, keeping team cohesiveness together.
If there's any reason people might want to come back to work, it's that.
Yeah.
Right? No more of this. No more zooming. Who's zooming whom?
At the same time, as men who are older, imagine if this would have happened in 1980. What would you have done? Well, who are you going to call?
Right,
huh?
Right.
So, I mean, as far as I'm concerned,
you'd be sitting on the phone.
So, as bad as it was, not great. At least we have the technology now to deal with things. Yes, it is great to see you, but technically, we've never met before in person. But I know you as a human being.
Yeah.
Like, and just from it's such a weird thing because, like, yes, back into the world, enjoy the world. But thank goodness we had what we had. Even in the failings, to be able to use those tools. So, you know, yin and yang on that. But, yeah, great to be back in person.
So
and still drinks from the fridge. If someone at Twit, if you're missing two of the lemonade blueberry things, was Leo.
That's for
it
you.
It wasn't me.
No, in fact, if you want alcoholic beverages, adult beverages, you're more than welcome. We could do that. I have some nice cognac. I have some Reposado Mezcal.
You do have good things.
We have booze.
Yeah.
In fact, I hate to say it, our entire marketing team is in-house. Michael O'Donnell at Photos on the Twitter.
He's professional.
Is here. He's a pro photo. Whenever we can have people in the studio, we get him so we have real pictures for the website. Anthony Nielsen is here wielding the Steadicam for I don't know what, some sort of back of the scene.
He's doing good work over there.
Yeah. He's good. He's also a great mixologist. So if you have an urge for something,
Find me the most expensive thing and make it to go.
I'll take a bottle and stick it in my backpack.
And Ashley's also here in our marketing department. So obviously this is a red letter day for something. I don't know what.
But, we're back in person, baby.
Yeah,
I love it. You're going to put a little effort over here. You know what I mean? Get it while getting is good until they shut us back down again, you know?
Well, that's I kind of feel like... this could be just another brief interregnum in between.
Let's do it while we can, at the very least, right?
Yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, we're so glad. I don't have to tell you to turn original audio on or anything. This is great. This is great. Mac Studio came on Friday for some of us. You got your Mac Studio?
I got a review unit, so I've been.
Oh,
I had it a
while.
Week before, yeah.
So actually, good. This is good because I noticed that the embargoes were lifted Thursday, the day before they. Arrive for real people.
6 a.m.
So all the YouTubers, I was amazed how many YouTubers got Mac Studios from Apple, like dozens. People I never heard of.
They're kind of the target audience, though. Apple really tries to get people's hands on them who are going to be able to appreciate them. And the studio has enough power. I think they figure that people who work in video every day are people who are going to be able to put it through its paces and
that's the kind
the speed
interpretation.
Of Final Cut Pro or whatever.
The unkind interpretation would be give it to people who have no journalistic ethics who will say, hey, look what Apple sent me. Isn't this great? There was a fair share of that, too.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I think both of those things are true. But I think sending it to somebody who works in video who's going to be like,
sense.
Oh, my God, look at this export is going to be a good story for Apple to tell about that. And the usual suspects like me got them, too. Although I didn't get the Ultra, they only sent me the Max. And if I've
so
learned
Gruber
one thing,
got the Ultra. I just want to say,
I know
you should feel bad.
I do feel bad
that you're now you know where I, you I are think, in the pecking
you know,
order.
You know they never they think of me as a writer and they're like, well, you don't need all that power. And I'm like, guys, have you seen how much processor Isotope audio plugins use? I use those all the time. It's brutal, and that's why I bought an iMac Pro, which I was using for a lot of time. But I did buy one of these and. The funny thing about this Apple Silicon world we're in now is what I've learned so far is if it's got the same chip in it, it's the same.
It's the same. Same clock speed.
Yeah.
For sync. And if you look at benchmarks, now Tom's Hardware has done them. Ars Technica, Andrew Cunningham did a whole bunch of good benchmarks. If you look at the single core performance, it's identical across the board.
And the multi-core between, the same core, right? The M1s are all one core. And then if you look at multi-core, we finally have another Mac to compare to the MacBook Pro. So if you get a same configuration, like a 16-inch MacBook Pro with the M1 Max, and you compare it to the Mac Studio, it's the same computer.
So Max equals Max.
Yeah. If it's an M1 Max, it's the same.
Even though the power can be different because now you're plugging it in. I'll tell you one thing was very impressive with the Mac Studio. The cooling subsystem on that is great. The fan, I'm sorry, what do they call them? The turbo snots? What are they? They've got a name. The thrusters.
Got a brand.
The thrusters come on right away.
Yeah.
And stay on and don't go up or down. So I ran Alex Lindsay's world famous Mac Buster. The photogrammetry program. It's actually a Russian company. I had to turn off my blocking on my Ubiquiti so I could download this. It is a program that takes a bunch of photos and then mushes them together and builds a 3D model out of it. Mega Shape, it's called. And the nice thing is it runs on Windows, Mac, and Linux, so I can do some benchmarking crosshand. Hmm. This is a shot as it was just wrapping up. Look at the cores. It's on my desktop. I know it may be confusing. It looks like I've got a Mac. On the right, those all that green, that's 100%. Every single core, efficiency cores, performance cores. And still, and it was did that for 20 hours, at no point did the fan get louder or did the machine feel hot or even the air coming out of the back. It might have gone up a degree or two. The cooling subsystem on that, and this was the Max, the Ultra, rather, so yeah. It has the copper, is incredible. So, incredible.
So that's what I'm excited for, right? Because this is the Max Pro, and this is now a Frisbee disc to me. I bought the M1.
No, but that's Jason's point.
I bought.
It shouldn't be a Frisbee.
So here's why it is. One, I got the Mac Mini M1, and I was like, all right, this is cool. It kind of does what I want because I'm shooting stuff in 8K. So I'm throwing hard stuff at it, and it worked. Like, oh, cool. In 422, it worked. When I got this, I said, oh, the game has changed. This thing
not as much as you would hope.
This thing, though, is eating through it, and it's making everything that I want to do easier. So I thought to myself, one, this is a brick. And I know the 16 is better than the 14. That's why I got it. But I got my Ultra sitting at home waiting for me. So when I get home next week, I'm selling this thing because I don't need it.
Because Ultra is, it's literally twice of what the Max is. So if you buy the base model, you know, and all of those in there of the studio, you're getting, especially since the 16-inch MacBook Pro has a little bit better cooling system in
and
it.
And that's...
It's identical. You know, there might be a little throttling occasionally on the 14, but on the 16, the M1 Max chip, it's the same performance. It's literally the same computer in a different box.
Yes.
But when you get the Ultra, then you're getting double that performance.
And I'm excited for that. Like, I have trashed Apple for 3 or 4 years because I have a Threadripper. I got 128 gigs of RAM. Like, I'm just like, dude, what are you talking about? I got a 3070. Like, I'm destroying everything I want to do for the most part. This is faster than that now in a laptop form. And I got to say, Apple got me back on that. Now, all they're doing is taking my money. My child's education is in danger. Boy. She choked me out when she saw me ordering it. She's like, what are you doing? I said, I need it. She's like, you don't need it, but I do. So I might have to replace my kid with the Ultra because I'm so excited to get home.
Vadim on the Max Tech channel actually took his apart.
Yeah.
And the first thing I felt bad for Vadim, here he is comparing, by the way, an AMD Ryzen to the Ultra. Let me pause that briefly. The Ultra is, this is where the thermal paste was over that Apple. So that's the actual outline of the CPU. The rest is system on a chip. So that's where the RAM is and the AI processor and the video playback and all that stuff. This is the Ryzen CPU. And you can see it's a little bigger. The die itself is huge. And I was very impressed at how well put together it was. I felt bad for Vadim because he had to put it back together again. It didn't look like that was going to be much fun.
This is not a system design. That's what the Mac Pro is for, right? A system design that, for you to break it open. This is not a system for regular people to
and
break it open.
And yet, unlike the old Mac Mini, you don't need a spudger or a paint chipper or anything. I mean, there are, if you take the rubber ring off on the bottom, there's screws, 4 screws. Take those off. More screws. He did discover a couple of interesting things. I was not as surprised as he was. There's two of these memory sockets for storage. Now, Apple said these are not upgradable. And in fact, these are the same SSD chips as on the other side where there's an SSD.
Right.
So it's clear this is for various builds.
It's the build-to-order configuration because they don't want to build different versions with
Why would
without.
They have different motherboards?
And the question is, so could I add later? Problem is that the storage controller is on the system on a chip. So... And they do a security thing where it's paired to the system on the chip. So I think the truth is you might be able... down the road,
but not yourself,
to go into an Apple store or an authorized repair center and get new storage put in and repaired.
But
with
Apple
your
has
system.
To make this storage first of all because it's a non-standard proprietary shape.
Yeah,
and they'd have to do that stuff. So I could see maybe Apple offering it as an upgrade, but it's this does not mean you have an upgradable system.
This is a trend for them too. That first off, like I think if you pay attention to what iFixit has been noticing lately, Apple stuff seems to be more repairable in general lately.
This looks totally repairable.
They seem to have heard the pain of everybody trying to fix things, and it costs Apple too when they do Apple Care, right? They have to take these things apart that are not meant to be taken apart. So that's part of it. I don't know. The other thing is, if you look at the display, which we haven't mentioned, the studio display.
We're going to get there.
That also has a non-replaceable part, which is it's got three different stand options. Same story. My understanding is that authorized repair centers or Apple Repair will be able to switch those stands out for a fee. So it's not that they're
welded on. So you could get the Visa mount
on. Yeah,
if you wanted to. If you said, I like the Pivot, $400 extra, but I want a Visa.
I read your review, and I was like, $400?
Yeah.
That's outrageous.
There's so much there. But anyway, we should talk about that at some point. But my point is, there are a bunch of things that are like not upgradable that might actually be upgradable, but only through
Apple,
the official path. Yeah.
This is the motherboard, the logic board. It is not very big. It's really a thin little piece of bologna in a giant sandwich. The bottom part is the 370-watt power supply, which is built into the thick Mac Studio. The top part, about half of it, is those fans, those thrusters, the blowers. Somebody told me, don't call them fans. They're blowers. I don't know what's the difference. It's a fan.
Yeah.
It takes air, pushes it out the back.
Yeah.
In an L shape, sucks it up, pushes it out. If you look at the engineering on that, very impressive, given what this thing does. And it shows you where Apple Silicon is really kind of lapping everybody else. This is all a system on a chip that does most of what you want to do.
It's close to something perfect that I've seen in a really long time.
It's really beautiful.
And again, I'm not the whole embargo life of YouTube just turns me off because I know, yes, it's for people to get excited about things. But I'm like, I really appreciate balance in things. So when I have to fanboy out and geek out like I have over these last Apple products, it makes me sick a little bit, but it really, this is the first time they've had magic in a long time. They don't even use that terminology anymore, but this is magic. This is a gateway and path that other companies cannot follow.
It's very good for Apple.
The one thing that they have that is against them, but for them, is their walled garden.
Right.
And everyone else has to work together. And now they're going to have a superhero team to try and defeat the evil empire of Apple when the empire is working in a unison form. And they are putting out power. This is impressive.
Yeah, you can bet Intel, AMD, NVIDIA, all trying to duplicate this, but they don't control the stack the way the Apple controls everything.
Unless you're, again, joining forces and coming up and saying, hey, at least let us combine our powers to make this. You can't compete right now with this. And the only thing that's keeping regular people out is, one, they can't afford it.
Yep.
Two, the system isn't in place for them to switch over. So a lot of people are like, look, there's things that won't run on Mac. I can't switch to Mac. I don't care how much power it is. I'm used to using
X, Y, and Z. If you're a gamer, you're not even looking at this with jealousy.
Exactly.
Because it doesn't compete at the gaming
platform. Exactly. But it is impressive, annoyingly enough to say repeatedly. So impressive.
This is, I should come back around to this mega shape. We'll talk more about this with Alex on Tuesday on Mac Break Weekly. But just to give you some idea, I thought, oh my God, this thing is slow. It took a total of 20 hours, or close to it, 18 hours, to do the entire photogrammetry. And so I said, Alex, 18 hours, that's a long time. He had given it to iJustine when the Mac Pro came out. I don't know what the Mac Pro numbers are. I'll find out. But he said, no, on my 16-inch i9 MacBook Pro, it went for 3 days, then crashed. So at least it's finished, and it did it in less than 72 hours. It did it about, 3.5 to do the alignment of the photos. 13.5 to do the build cloud, the build mesh is a half an hour. It didn't finish building textures before I had to come in here, but I think it had another half hour to go. So I'll say 18 hours maybe.
It's fast.
That's pretty fast.
That's pretty good.
Now the most important thing, the bottom line. If you're doing photogrammetry, you should get an Ultra.
Sure. I mean, that is the question of, like, what is an Ultra 4 versus, like, an M1 Max? And I think the answer is they are increasingly narrowing the slice of the market that needs the hardware, right? Like, the Max is so powerful already that with those isotope plugins and all of that, I'm like, this is probably more than I need, but it's going to last me for a few years, and that's fine.
Did you notice your processing was faster?
Oh, God, yes. And I was coming from it was only an 8-core Xeon, but an 8-core Xeon from a few years ago, and it's not even close. Plus, you know, the storage is twice as fast as it was on my old iMac Pro. But the Ultra, then, is double that. And there's a Mac Pro waiting out there, which at least the rumor is will also come in a 2-Ultra configuration with 40 cores.
Yeah.
I think what's really funny, though, I mean, I do think the competition is going to get their act together. I think that you're going to see a lot of people following what Apple has done and realizing they need to change their game a little bit and up their game. I think what's funny about this story is what we were talking about a year or two ago that we're not talking about anymore, which was there wasn't any doubt that Apple was going to be able to make something like this laptop here, which is an M1 MacBook Air. There wasn't really any doubt of, like, take an iPhone chip or really an iPad chip, stick it in a MacBook Air. Sure, you could do that. That'll be fine. But what about Pro systems? That was the big question. What about Pro systems? Surely a phone chip can't scale up. And that's been the funny thing about this week is, like, it does. These are the first generation Pro chips from Apple.
These are not even iPhone 13s. These are 12s.
Yes, these are based on the A14. So they're the last previous year's chip cores. Yeah. So that's the funny thing, is that this is their first generation and they are supplying Pro power. Who knows how it's going to go and what pitfalls there might be. Nobody knows what is in that Mac Pro. Are they ever going to support external GPUs, or is it only going to be Apple GPUs? There's still a lot of questions about the very high end, but you're talking about the tiniest slice of the market that there are questions about.
For most people, the single core M1 performance is enough for browsing, for email.
Totally.
Anything you're doing. And that's going to be exactly the same on a MacBook Air as it is going to be on a Mac Studio Ultra, right? It's
if you're just doing the basic work.
But, yeah.
And the M1 is like, 6 performance cores and 2 efficiency cores or something like that. And they power manage. And I think that's the truth. In fact, one of the problems with covering something like a Mac Studio is you're already slicing the market real thin. Because
this is a pro product.
Almost anything that anybody who would use a Mac would want to do outside of the pros can be handled by a 24-inch iMac or an M1 Mac Mini or an M1 Air. Like, the M1, as basic as it is, and it doesn't offer a lot of pro features, you know, it's more than capable for the vast majority of people who use computers. But then there's the Studio and the MacBook Pro for the higher end.
And
people,
you know,
like us,
there's
like
going to be people like us who maybe not. I mean, look, Lisa for sure is never going to use the Ultra. I said, look at this, Lisa. You'll never see these cores pegged again in however long she has that thing. She, even though she's doing spreadsheets and stuff, it's never going to challenge that.
Never.
You gave her an Ultra?
Yeah. She's my wife.
No, I
happy
know.
Wife, happy life.
I love Lisa, and I know.
Yeah.
But I mean, just
give her the Max and tell her it's the Ultra.
Well, you know what? That is too much power for one woman to have.
Okay, I have an evil thought in my head that when my Max comes, it looks exactly the same.
Swap it out.
I might just sneak in the middle of the night, sync the two, take the Ultra back, and give her the Max, and she probably wouldn't.
She'll never know.
I'm going to tell you one thing.
She would be justified in smothering you.
If you don't do it, I'm going to buy one, Mr.
Ninja?
I'll do it myself. Yeah. If you don't swap them out, I will show up on Sunday when you guys are in studio, and I will swap it out.
I had also ordered for her because I thought it should be. She has a 49-inch curved display, and she was using that with an iMac. We replaced a 2014 iMac. So I got her. I thought at first, well, I'm just going to get a separate monitor. And then I got her this studio display thinking. And as soon as I saw, boy, the reviews from Nilay Patel on The Verge, from Daring Fireball's John Gruber, from Joanna Stern at The Wall Street Journal, and on and on and on. This camera is awful. Even Micah Sargent, who has the studio display, he said, my family, I used it to make a FaceTime call. They said, is your camera smudged? Can you clean the camera? It was brand new out of the box.
Yeah.
I canceled the display. I don't, for $1,500, and you even, Jason, helped because you tweeted a picture of your display crashing.
Yes. It didn't crash. It restarted after an error.
That's a crash.
No. In Apple world, we don't call that a crash. Yeah, it's that display is hilarious. It is
it's an iPhone.
It is running iOS. It's an iPhone 11
running iOS 15.4.
Yeah, the the screen, like my issues with it are the $400 adjustable stand, because I think fundamentally display should be adjustable ergonomically. I think it's kind of outrageous.
I ordered that for it.
That's how
well.
I feel about that 24-inch iMac, too. It's like you get this beautiful iMac in a cute color, and then you put a dictionary under it. Not great. You should probably have it be adjustable. The webcam is weird because I didn't see the problems other people were seeing with it, which is why I think it is probably... I think it's a bunch of things going on here. I think that a cropped widescreen 12 megapixel camera in different lighting can...
And it's cropped so it can do center stage.
Yeah, can be weird, but I think there are also some image processing things happening that, depending on your lighting conditions...
Apple says, we're going to update this,
really
it'll
bad.
Be better.
Because I did a 90-minute, actually talking about the embargo, a 90-minute live video on YouTube after the embargo dropped with Dan Morin. We did it for Six Colors, and I spent the entire show on the webcam.
And nobody noticed.
And it looks good.
Nobody said, oh, that's terrible.
It looks good. So I don't know what's going on there, and I've got to think that there are software problems, which, keep in mind, will require an iOS update, apparently, in order to fix them. But there are some software problems that are making it in certain lighting conditions. I don't think it's a hardware problem. It's possible I just got a good one, but my guess is that something really bad happened in their image processing pipeline, and it made it all look bad.
Why didn't they notice that before they shipped it?
I don't know. I wonder if it was a different version that was on the displays that they were shipping. It is one of the weirdest things that's happened to me in 25 years of writing about technology, because I got a heads up from one of my fellow embargo reviewers that there was a problem with a webcam. And so I got to spend time trying to duplicate
and I
couldn't do it. Maybe there's too much light coming into my office. I have a well-lit office. Well, I don't know what's
Gruber
going on.
He even had a problem with center stage. He was like, he posted a picture where he's off center.
Off center stage. I did duplicate that. That's a problem where center stage just sort of hangs around and you're not in the center, and
that's
eventually you're in the center.
It's in the iPads. I think it's in the MacBooks where it centers you, the camera.
So it's very clever.
It's
an really ultra wide camera, and then they use machine learning to detect faces and automatically kind of zoom and pan the camera to match it works.
A portal does this and does it better.
No, the Facebook portal does it.
Yes, and it does it very well. So as much as I just said they're magical,
Google,
how come they just don't? They can't care about webcams because they keep putting these things in all these devices.
So this laptop has a very thin screen, but you have an inch and a half.
Yeah.
Plenty of room in the studio display to put a good camera in there. Here's, by the way, the crash message. This I don't want to see a crash on my on my monitor. Plus, it's got it's thick and square, and it's got a big fan on it. You know, when they said their i13 Bionics in it, I scratched my head. Mark Gurman was on MacBreak Weekly on Tuesday. He said these displays were designed 2 years ago. That's why they don't have HDR.
Yep.
They're not great displays. They're LG panels probably, but only 600 nits. He says that's why it's the A13. That was the generation of iPhone 2 years ago. Mm-hmm. And my conjecture, and he kind of agreed, is they had extra chips. Why not?
There is so much going on with Apple's products right now that is recycling. You can see it. Like, they are one of the ways... They make it up in volume. One of the ways it works is they keep using the same stuff. So the camera in this, and this is the argument, I think, about the studio display that's interesting, is did they get carried away because they like center stage so much, and they're like, well, we'll just use the exact same hardware in every single device that has center stage. So it's the same camera.
That and spatial audio.
Right. It's
and
all,
hey, Shlomo.
Right, right. All of the microphone stuff sounds very much like what's in JJ's MacBook Pro. The speakers, they say that they're better, but they're very much the same engineering.
Yeah.
They're reusing so many of the parts.
Recycled.
Because, I mean, the truth is they are only one company, and how do you handle it if you are going your own and building all your own stuff? Is you got to reuse it, right?
So I canceled it. I had an LG HDR 120 hertz display. No, I guess it's only 60 hertz, so it wasn't that fat, but it's just for Lisa's spreadsheet. She doesn't need 120 hertz spreadsheets. That I'd already bought. I brought a Brio camera because I didn't know Apple was going to do this. I canceled the display, and I said, well, we'll just use what we already have. It's fine. The only thing she doesn't have is those nice speakers. And they sound good, right?
No.
No?
No, that was actually... I all these people complaining about the webcam, and I'm like, guys, I had no problem with the webcam. The speakers are okay for speakers that are embedded in a little display, but that's it. They're
interesting.
You don't want to listen to music on them, right?
So do they sound as good as the iMac?
I didn't think they sounded as good as the iMac Pro. which is maybe the iMac Pro has better speakers than the regular
that
iMac.
Seems a really weird thing to skimp on.
I think they're as good as you can get in that space in a monitor, but they're not a. Then they oversell it and they say, "Oh, this is all studio quality," and I think that's the problem. However, I will say Mac users have wanted an Apple external display for years, and this thing is going to sell really well because there are so many people with MacBook Pros and MacBook Airs who. Their only real option at Apple's Retina resolution has been the LG Ultrafine, and this is the same panel, more or less, just a little bit brighter.
But what I bought for $550 bucks at LG Ultrafine. It's 4K, not 5K. And that's fine.
And the only monitor that got me excited is the Samsung Arc. If you'd like to buy two of those and send
those are nice. This is that new one that goes up as well as out, right?
You can get us one. Me and Lisa.
Why would you? That is the weirdest. So is the idea that you're playing a game and you're tilt back?
So the first
live
thing,
in a cave.
Yeah.
Your computer is your cave.
So the first thing I don't understand in general why I'm probably just going to get one just so I can see is they show you the display with you have sections. You have your gaming and you can see your webcam and it's arced in front of you, right? But I'm like, how is my webcam deadpan center shooting when I'm looking at this monitor? How is that possible? It's not possible, but that's why you spend money and buy things because the marketing looks good and I feel like I should have it.
They
should definitely get us one. My birthday, Christmas.
What's it called again?
The Samsung Arc.
Arc. Let me just see if I can. How much is it? Have they announced?
Like $8 million. I don't know how much it is.
It's one of those if you don't ask, you have to ask.
Yeah,
it's too expensive.
Yeah. Well. All right.
There it is.
Oh my God!
You can see it right there.
Yeah. No, I know what it looks like. Wow. I'm trying to show the people at home.
Yeah.
So. Oh, that looks like a walking case of neck strain.
You can flip it, and you can also, it just becomes a widescreen when you turn it. Okay. Because guess what? They don't charge you $400.
Wow.
Yeah. They don't charge you $400. It comes with a stand, though. You can rotate it. You can rotate it.
How much is it? Well, we don't know.
We don't know.
It might be more than $400.
If it's less than $1,500, we're still winning.
It's not less than $1,500.
Don't. That is not a monitor.
When you say it like
buy.
That means you won't buy it for me for Christmas. We got to just negotiate, you know? We lowball the price. We just have them order it. We show them the bill 2 months later. But that's impressive to me. That's something new, and I'm excited to check
it's
that
new.
Out.
It's new. I mean, you can say
it's,
that much.
It's different, yeah.
Yeah, it's new. All right. You reviewed the M1 iPad. You also have the new iPad Air. You like it?
Yeah, it's talk about recycling. This is another part of that story. In fact, I recycled parts of my reviews of the M1 iPad
Very
Pro
handy. Very handy.
And the old iPad Air because there's nothing new on that product.
That was kind of my thought is that if you already have an iPad Pro, this is the iPad Pro, kind of.
It's without the iPad Pro, without TrueMotion, and without the mini LED display on the high end, and without Thunderbolt, which nobody really uses. But it is, last year, 2 years ago, they did the new iPad Air with the flat sides, and it looks a lot like the iPad Pro. This is just that with a couple small
Type-C
upgrades, because they put center stage in it. So that same
when
camera is in
see
there.
When are we going to see Type-C in the phones? They're the last holdout from Lightning. You think this year?
I don't know. I don't know whether they'll ever do it. We'll see.
They're making
too much money from the dongle life, surely. I mean, it's just annoying.
They also got, they really got yelled at when they went away from the last standard connector. And I'm not sure whether they want to do it. I wonder if there are still people inside Apple who are like, no, the next port is no port. We'll just do MagSafe for everything.
We'd heard that rumor, or maybe they'd have pogo pins on the back and there'd be an adapter.
It would be nice if Lightning went away. Every time I have to find a Lightning plug for my trackpad, I think, Lightning. Still on the trackpad, still on the mouse.
And people wouldn't get mad now because the whole world is on USB-C.
Yes.
Mm. Before, people were upset because there were four different versions that you could be using. Now it's USB-C and Lightning, and that's really
it's
on
over.
Every device. So it's over. So they might as well switch it over. And
I agree.
There better always be a port on this phone or TikTokers will lose their mind. How am I going to get my Pro Audio with Bluetooth and sync up my voice if you don't keep a plug in this bad boy? Well, plugs for life.
I agree with you. I think that my fear is that Apple has people inside who are like, no, man, you don't understand.
They have
We're going to have a magnetic smart connector for people who need it, and everything else will be wireless.
Yeah.
And this is the same story that they've told about all sorts of other things. And, losing the headphone jack, we all got through that. But losing... losing a wired access to a device is a bad place to go. It's a bad place to go for lots of reasons, including like the high quality audio or if it bricks, or I mean, there's so many reasons to keep some port on the device.
And just power. If I'm out
and visiting,
they're going to put pogo pins in the back.
I go to somebody
for $59.99. You'll be able to buy a little lightning connector that pogo pins onto the back. And you'll be right back up with the rest of us.
Well, by that time, I'll be as old as you, and it won't matter to me anymore.
Nothing matters to me anymore.
Exactly. That's my point. Once you reach a certain age, you're just like, fluff it.
Nothing matters. Yep. I'm basically feigning interest in this whole thing. I couldn't care less.
When you get your wife a supercomputer for a spreadsheet, I could say that you're at the peak essence of whatever.
And how's your wife?
Well, I don't have one. Because I couldn't buy her an Ultra with a straight face. That's why.
No, I think that there are times that one just says, and I've said it several times now. She's probably getting sick of hearing it. Honey, you have the best Mac Apple has ever made.
And you know what's funny?
Right? Is that right?
And you know what's funny? And since she knows that you love her that much, that's why she has the black card and you do not.
Yeah, that's right. Although I could have used her black card to buy it. That would have been nice. Let's take a little break. It's nice to have everybody in studio. Mm. One of the things you lose, people always say on the phone, you know, the shows where we're all on Zoom or whatever, that we all step all over each other.
Yeah. Mm.
And it's not because you get the, somehow it's going through the air, I'm going to talk. You don't have that problem. There's no latency.
The not even latency. It's just that when I'm at home, I see main camera Jason speaking, and I'm waiting for him to stop, and I don't know that Ian's also waiting.
Yeah.
And then we both, Jason finished, and we both jump in.
Yep.
So being able to look each other in the eye does make for a much better flow.
Yeah, it is amazing, just having not done this in a while, how much body language, just the eyes, the mouth, like everybody who's leaning in, who's ready to go, I'm going to back off.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah. The power of people. let's pay these bills.
And J.J. Stone. Oh, Doctor is here from IQMZ.com, from TheRegister.com. Of course, the great Ian Thompson, not Lane. Ian, let's get that straight. Why do you think the lower third said Lane? Was it an old one, or was it was a joke?
I was being wound up.
You were being wound up. And Jason Snell, SixColors.com. It's so nice to have all three of you here. So much fun. I'm going to take you out to dinner after this. How about that?
Woohoo!
Okay.
If you tell Lisa that Ultra is not what she needs,
I'm going to tell her so much that she trades it with my Max. And that way, because I ordered an Ultra, but I'm going to order a Max just so I can have two Ultras. And I'm just going to swap it out. Lisa loves me.
As cunning plans go, announcing it on the show is possibly
probably
not
really she's watching. Probably. Oh, no, she's not. You know why I know? She went to see The Batman.
Oh, she's going to be 3 hours.
She's going to be stuck there forever. She's
well, nobody in. Tell her.
She's going to come out talking like this. Our show today brought to you by ZipRecruiter. Hiring is back. The world is coming back. And you know what's great? Employers, 90% of them are really thinking, how do we make our employee experience a top priority this year? You know, make them want to come back. Make it worth their while. And the good news is employers are learning. We just started doing 4-day work week. Employees love that, right? Listening to your employees, making them feel valued, asking them questions, letting them have input, focusing on the company culture. Some company cultures are not so good, especially in the gaming industry. So we're going to make it better, right? More learning opportunities. Our staff loves that they can get, will pay for schooling. More flexibility in schedules, more empathy. If you do need to add more employees to your team, you're making a great place for them. Can I tell you where you find them? ZipRecruiter, ZipRecruiter.com. Right now, you could try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Why ZipRecruiter? We use it for a couple of reasons. One, because you post once at ZipRecruiter, it goes to the widest possible audience. Hundreds of job sites, social media. It's everywhere. And of course, the wider your net, the more likely you're going to find somebody who's just right for that job. But then ZipRecruiter does something pretty amazing. Because people come to ZipRecruiter looking for work, they have more than a million resumes, current resumes on file. They will actually look at the requirements for your job and match them with people who are applying for work. And then they give them to you and say, look, here's 10 people who really have the qualifications. And if you decide to invite them, let me tell you, those people are much more likely to apply, much more likely to take the job. There's something about having the job come to you and say, hey, we've got a job for you. That's one of the many reasons ZipRecruiter is the number one rated hiring site in the United States. That's not just me saying that. G2 Ratings said as well. And one of the great things about ZipRecruiter is you post there, and it doesn't take very long before great candidates start rolling in. They say 4 out of 5 ZipRecruiter employers get a great candidate within a day. We get them within an hour or two. I'm always amazed. Lisa will say, look, look, all these are great. It's incredible. Hire the right employees with ZipRecruiter, and you can try it for free right now. Go to ZipRecruiter.com/twit. That's ZipRecruiter.com/twit, T-W-I-T. Please use that address so that they know you saw it here. ZipRecruiter.com/twit. Do you find, Jason, that you're doing that on your podcast? You're saying, because people who listen to shows like ours are smart. They'll just go to ZipRecruiter.
Right.
So I beg. Do you have to do that? Do you ever do that?
Begging to type in a complete URL?
Yes, type the whole thing in.
I just try to make it sound very commanding. Yeah. Just go now.
Go now. Do this. You must.
.com/something. Yes.
It's the world as independent podcasters is slowly constricting as Spotify and Apple and Amazon and iHeart buy up everything, including all the ad metrics and everything. It's going to get harder and harder and harder. So whether it's Owen's, you know, IQMZ podcasts, like
I have a different way of receiving funds. I use my shows as leverage.
You don't beg?
No.
You command?
No. I'm a person who markets other people, so I hate marketing for myself.
I do too.
I had 5,000 people in my email.
But you're
email
a marketer.
List. Yeah, I have 5,000 people on my email list. I never sent them one email.
Yeah.
So I finally used them last week, and I reached out, and like 3,000 of them said something. I was like, oh, they're still alive. They're out there. So you got to reach out to the people, and the people will help you out. You know, you've built a little empire here. You know, we're still
in the corner of the country. Support the podcasters they like, whether it's Jason or Owen. You know, and do you do a podcast, Ian?
We don't know.
Why doesn't the Register do a podcast?
Because, to be quite frank, we've been trying to hire people, and finding good journalists is tough to do, and that's really our priority. We've just massively expanded.
Everyone's a journalist now.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I tried to say it with a straight face.
If you were on Zoom, I would have missed that eye roll, and it would have been sad.
It would have been a problem, yes.
But yes, it's and we've just doubled the size of the US office. But yeah, it's on the list of things to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's like primarily we want, you know, people who are writing and
it's
and
a hard time that. For content in general.
It's going to be worse when the cookies thing kicks in next year.
Don't get me started on the cookies thing. This cookies banner by itself is becoming the biggest hazard on the internet. They're getting bigger and bigger, going to a lot of sites now. You cannot read any content. Used to be you could ignore it.
Yeah.
You can't even ignore it now. You have to respond to it, and there's options. And who does that benefit? It doesn't make it more private.
I really would like to know who it benefits, because it's a scourge upon the internet.
It's a scourge.
Especially, not for nothing, most media and content is consumed on my phone. So even just
even
the fact that I've
there.
Got to sometimes pinch in to get to an X. Yeah. If I wanted to X it out, I can't even, because my... You know, I got chunky fingers. I can't even like get to it. I have to accept, because the accept is the only thing in the big blue button that you can get in that finite window space. So it's very annoying.
I'm finding that with a lot of titles, it's getting increasingly out of control. And I know you and I have disagreed about this, and I don't mind the cookie screen so often, because you can at least check and see what kind of stuff they're taking. But it's just got out of control. I mean, this really needs to be reined in.
What's going to happen is people are going to start running blockers. They're running ad blockers already. They're going to run... it's easy to block that cookie banner. You block Origin as a switch to do it. And you make this enough of an annoyance, pretty soon it gets ignored completely.
Yeah, I use a plugin called Super Agent.
Yeah.
And it is the automatically accept and get it out of my face kind of thing, which is going against the entire principle of that pop-up, but it's just an annoyance. And I don't want to ever see it, ever. And anybody in California gets to see it now.
Oh, yeah.
All the people in Europe used to see it. Now everybody in California gets to see it.
Oh, that's why it's gotten worse.
Yeah, that's why. Because California passed a Europe-like law about cookie consent. Yes.
Oh, great.
Hooray, we solved it.
Hooray. Fixed. Privacy's
here. I feel kind of guilty that, you know, the EU actually pushed this on and now California's adopted it, but, you know, needs must.
We didn't talk. I don't want to go back to the Apple conversation because people are going to think it's an all-Apple show. It's not. But I should mention this universal control is out now with iOS 15.4. Yeah. I cannot get it working on one of my iPads. It works on my Mini, but not on my M1.
Weird.
I don't know why. Tried it in 100 different ways. People who use it say it's very cool. It's not like Sidecar. It's not a second monitor. It's actually
Duet.
Or Duet. It's not like that because your iPad is still an iPad.
Yeah,
so you can run iPad apps.
That's the most
but control them with your mouse and keyboard.
I never use Sidecar because I would always put an app over there that I had an iPad app of. And I'd be like, well, why not run the iPad app? And
so I'll have Discord running over there or IRC.
Exactly. And it's the version that runs on iOS. But you can just move your mouse over there control it.
Yeah, nice. One of the things I often am doing is running YouTube videos while I'm coding or learning something at the same time. And it's nice to have a little screen there that I can watch the video on. So really, yeah. I mean, you can still touch it. It's not like it's adding a huge amount of functionality, but
That's how I convinced myself that I didn't need Apple's monitor at all because I said to myself, I've got the 12.9 M1 iPad Pro.
Really nice.
So that display is phenomenal.
Yeah, it's all you need.
Like
better than the studio display.
Yeah, I double check a lot of work and reference work on it. So I'm like, all right, I can keep my 47-inch monitor and my TV monitor and just use the Pro as my official Apple display to check everything and check all my color stuff right. So it's a
But you are running a 16-inch MacBook Pro.
Which is a Frisbee. It's gone. My iPad Pro's in my bag. But this is already sold. This is going away.
Is that an i9 or is that an M1?
This is the M1 Max.
You're getting rid of it?
Yeah.
A Max.
I've had it for three more days before I could have returned it at the store. So now I'm going to sell it almost at full price. It's the same difference. Someone's going to be very happy with this thing.
Okay.
And it's a great machine. It's just that it's not a studio.
I'm glad I didn't. I was going to get that for my son who's a TikToker.
Yeah.
And I think I already ordered him a Mac Studio because I think that'll be a perfect thing for his videos.
To tell you too, you might as well get him the laptop because he's cooking and making food on the go. He could be out here mixing and moving.
Well, he'll keep the laptop that he's got. He's got an i9. He'll keep that. But he'll do a lot of the editing. I think it'll be faster for him.
Get him an M1. Hmm.
Yeah, I think so. And he's got too. 2 million followers on TikTok now. Did you see that?
Really? By the time I come back, it'll be 6 million.
Wow,
he'll be running the world.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. He's going to be he's going to be on Access Hollywood teaching Mario Lopez how to make a McRib sandwich. I think this week or the next.
And that Caribbean pesto is the jam. That seasoning is it's impressive.
It's good. It's good. I now know how Frank Sinatra felt. I now know how Donald Trump feels when the junior exceeds the senior. No. Speaking of nothing. This deep fake, did you see this, of Zelensky saying surrender is kind of terrifying. I don't think it fools anybody.
No.
This was posted on Facebook. Of course, they pulled it down immediately. I don't speak Ukrainian, but this is a deep fake of the president of Ukraine telling his soldiers to surrender. It's over. I hope it didn't work. I think it's obviously...
Yes, I think people clocked onto it very quickly and also... they got the news out fast. But yeah, I mean, if you don't have access to an open media, open media, and you're living in Russia and you've only got state sponsored stuff, and they showed that.
It's a nice try.
Yeah.
It's a nice try. And I worry this is the beginning, right? We're going to see a lot more of this kind of thing.
This is definitely going to be a coming thing.
Owen, if you look at that, can you tell it's a deep fake?
So
I guess his voice sounds a little. Let me play the audio.
The real problem is whether you recognize it quickly in your mind or in your eyesight. We're at the level now, within 2 more years, you won't know the difference.
Right.
Yeah.
There's so many things where people send me something and I'm like, that's Photoshopped. And they're like, no, it's not. And you run it through something and you could tell. Because at this point, telling me something's Photoshopped or not, unless you put a shark on my head and it looks ridiculous, it's really hard to know. Mm. The skill level is so advanced, and now we've gotten to this level where now even the audio. So imagine you don't even need to see that this, even the setup of that makes you question the legitimacy of it. The background and all that kind of stuff instantly makes your mind like, oh, no. But imagine just being on a open broadcast radio and hearing a message go out over the radio in Barack Obama's voice. Right. I don't care. And you're in the middle of the closet in the dark with no sun. You hear that voice. You know exactly what it is. So to hear a certain message come out.
And it's very easy to do audio deepfakes now. Very credible audio.
In 2 years, it's really going to become
problematic. I'm not actually here because I didn't really want to be in studio. So I'm a clone.
Avatar Uncle Leo.
Avatar. Yeah.
If I want to be optimistic, what I'll say is that I hope that our media literacy means that there is a limited window where this stuff will work. And if we work really hard, we can make that window as small as possible.
It's a bit of a race, though.
It is a race, and the people who are going to do bad deeds are going to be the ones who can find a way to slide in there before our defenses go up. But I do think people are learning about things that are fake. And the deepfake is a great example where a couple of years ago, everybody would have been like, oh my God. And now they're like, oh yeah, I saw that thing with Tom Cruise deepfaked. And they start to get it. And we start to have to build in another level where everything, like, I've been noticing that a lot of organizations like Bellingcat are doing verification of videos in Ukraine of attacks on video or reports or anything like that. And that becomes like an important part of journalism, is the validation of what we see. Did that really happen? And that's great. Like, I know that it's terrible that this is going on and that there are going to be places where people get misled. But if I have any optimism about it, it's that it looks like we're trying to build up some structures to teach people that they can't just trust it when they see it. But it's so hard because it's human nature to just trust that voice or that face that you know so well.
And to human nature, was that what you said? That's also the saddest part of what goes on right now in the world. I show someone a picture of or a video of a cat falling off a tree. That's staged. That's not real. It's not
instantly. And I bet Leah, your daughter, does that faster than anybody, right?
Anyone under 24,
immediately
you send them something, and it's like, oh, they did that for jokes. You're already conditioned not to believe in spontaneity, in genuine love and happiness. Sometimes
for truth.
It does. Like you said, we're naturally as humans adjusting to, okay, well, CGI, not real, fake.
Yeah, I mean,
staged.
I do think there's also a tech fix here to be had, because there's been a lot of interesting work with using AI systems to spot these kind of things and to build up fingerprints of them and just make it a lot easier to, you know, if you see a video, just to have a little button by the side of it saying, we believe this is faked, would solve an awful lot of the issues.
Yeah.
Well, doesn't Facebook do that now?
With some things, but it's not exactly 100%.
But and then you're automatically applying your AI to it, which a lot of that's not being done automatically, but it can be done, right? Where you apply some AI to the video and you say, this can't be real. The lighting isn't, you know, there are the pixels aren't right. Like, analysis that human eyes can't see.
There's another side effect to this, which is something that I think the Russians have been putting forward for at least 5 years, which is don't trust anything. So if it undermines your sense of anything being true, that is also very detrimental. Yeah. That's destructive as well, if you have no source of truth at all.
Although one of the things that's been happening in the run-up to this war especially is the approach by NATO and especially like the U.S. Intelligence Committee or community has been...
That smart of them?
To
they inoculated us.
They kept saying, here is what Russia is doing.
What they're
going to
do.
Right, they are going to invade.
Yeah.
And Russia's like, no, we're not going to invade, and then they invade. And they're like, well, here's what they're going to do. They are now starting to claim that there are chemical weapons depots. That's because they're planning chemical attacks. And that is...
Isn't that smart?
A new use of intelligence where they're trying to be basically transparent and say, we're going to just say everything we think is going to happen because it makes it harder for the other side to play the game.
But even that was an uphill battle because I saw people saying, oh, yeah, just like you said, yellow cake, it was a problem in Iraq and let's invade. We have a historic distrust of our intelligence community. But the more they do this and are proven right, which they have been, the better. And I thought that was a very interesting strategy to inoculate us against disinformation by saying, here's what they're going to tell you next.
Imagine using information to counteract disinformation.
Yeah, very smart.
Okay.
But very smart. I mean, Russia pretty much invented the whole concept of disinformation under the communists, and they do it
very, very well. Masters of it.
But as they were saying at the start, they're going to hold a false flag operation. That'll lead off with the invasion and that sort of thing. And yes, it does draw their fangs somewhat.
So what's the deal with Tulsi Gabbard? Because she was the one who's spreading that Russian propaganda. That's kind of interesting. You know?
I don't think we can legally suggest that she's a Russian asset, but you know, who knows?
I mean, that was an interesting thing. Speaking of mistakes, you want to check your email. Very important. Check your email.
Story.
Telegram didn't check its email, and now it's banned in Brazil. Whoops, says The Verge. This is an article from Mitchell Clark. Pavel Durov, who's the CEO and founder of Telegram. Okay, so Brazil says, we sent a takedown request to Telegram saying, you know, if you don't take this down, we're going to ban you. We're going to suspend the app in Brazil. By the way, it seems like the Brazilian Supreme Court has a thing about doing this. Remember, they tried to do it with WhatsApp, and there was practically a revolution.
Well, WhatsApp is the backbone.
Everybody uses it in Brazil. I think they can get away with it with Telegram because it's not quite so popular.
It's not.
So Durov put out a statement saying, it seems we had an issue with emails going between our Telegram corporate addresses and the Brazilian Supreme Court. From now on, we're going to have a dedicated email address for takedowns.
Great.
The court sent it to an old general-purpose email address, and we never saw it. And sorry, guys.
that's hilarious. It's weird that can even be a possible thing.
I mean, I don't know. Startups and companies that grow out of startups often are so disorganized.
I miss emails all the time. I can understand that.
And they have
we have many addresses.
And they didn't have somebody who's paying attention to Brazil, or they had an old email somewhere that the person was checking that.
It went in the spam folder, right? It had too many links.
Yep.
Probably was phishing.
That's a good answer.
It's probably too many links. Really Brazil.
Oh, right?
Sorry.
Yeah. Too many
Brazil
links.
Who? Yeah. Brazil? Who is this?
The Brazil? Durov wrote, on behalf of the team, I apologize to the Brazilian Supreme Court for our negligence. We definitely could have done a better job.
You think? You know, it's just good grief. It's just 101 stuff.
And also, to be fair, Telegram was dealing with other issues. Hmm. Particularly in Russia, they maybe had a lot of people answering those emails. You know, there might have been some other stuff going on. So I hope that they're able to. Apparently, tens of millions of Brazilians use Telegram, according to Durov. So check your email, check your spam.
All those people most likely signed up when WhatsApp went down.
You're right.
Because that literally shut down 3/4 of the world. People don't realize, you know, oh, my Instagram's messed up. Who cares about your Instagram?
Yeah.
This is the only way I can talk to my sister about ordering fish for our restaurant. Like, businesses run on WhatsApp in certain places in the world. So I'm sure they got a boost.
Oh, yeah.
When it went down. That's why everybody's like, on Telegram.
Telegram got a real bump. Remember when
that sounds like a lot.
Facebook or WhatsApp changed its policy. It's a policies, and everybody signed up for Telegram.
Right,
that was a
Telegram
huge...
has the most sort of like specific encryption and privacy policy around.
But Telegram is not a good encryption. I wouldn't rely on Telegram.
They have a guy in Brazil now, though.
Yeah,
they made that promise. Like we got a guy.
Well, that's wouldn't you hate to be that guy? That's what Russia and China both said. You got to have an office in country, so we know who to throw in jail if you don't comply with our requests. Who volunteers for that job? Owen J.J. Stone.
I would volunteer for that job. You know how many MacBook Ultras I could buy with the hazard pay?
Sign me up. Not going to do you a lot of good in Siberia, dude.
Look, trust me. It'll be negotiated. Okay. It'll be worth it.
Get me out of the gulag.
I'll be deleting everything. I'll be checking every email. I won't sleep with one eye open. I'm checking every email. Yeah. None's getting past me for the right price.
Yeah, you see, when it comes to messaging, Signal all the way. In Moxie, you trust. And then, you know.
I agree.
There you go.
100%. Yeah. Although he no longer runs Signal, does that matter?
True, no, but I mean he's got a good team there.
Yeah, I think so.
And they're very much on side. The exposure he did of the Saudi Arabian government was just hilarious when they approached him to build a surveillance network. And he was like, "Oh, tell me more. Tell me what exactly are you looking for?" Blah, blah, blah. And then published everything, and it was just like,
"Oops."
Read that. Yeah, somebody's getting fired in Riyadh.
Vimeo, another email you might want to not ignore, is sending out big bills to content creators because apparently they changed their deal. They want everybody to know that Vimeo is not an indie YouTube. We are not a place to put your videos. We are for business, B2B. And so a number of content creators got thousands of dollar bills if they want, you know, pay up or get off our platform.
They're going to get off the platform. And it's sad because I understand the premise of what they're doing. And Vimeo is, if you wanted to be elegant, and if you wanted to eat at an Italian restaurant instead of McDonald's, YouTube is McDonald's. There's one every corner. It's out there. Vimeo is like, I'm a professional. I have a reel. I want a clean player. I don't want you clicking into some kid getting hit over the back of the head with a wiffle bat or anything crazy. I just want to display work.
Do you have any Vimeo videos?
I do, but it's for client work, so it's private.
And that's how they want it to be.
Yes. But again, even if let's say I'm semi-popular and I wanted to have a reel. Let's say I'm an actor and I'm sending my reel out to places and it happens to get out, or something, a sketch that I have, and it happens to get popular. Great for me, bad for me, because, hey, look, I'm still just this indie guy trying to put something out there, and it caught a wave, which is great. But now I get this bill, and guess what? It didn't get picked up by a studio, guys. Like, I don't have this money to do it. So it's a weird balance. But again, Vimeo has a very clean, beautiful player, yeah, and it doesn't bring you outside of the house.
Yeah.
So those bills are just rough for some people that are using the service but can't foot the bill.
When The Verge exposed this, Vimeo realized this wasn't very good PR, so they've actually changed it. You have a 2 terabytes.
It was such a weasel word statement. They're just like, obviously, we would like to we support our customers any way possible. Yeah, you got caught, mate. So just, you know, let's not overdo this.
Yeah, but that would be a scary email to get. Oh, you owe us $3,500 for the next year if you want to keep your videos up.
And again, for a working professional that you know, for a smaller business or something like that, that's a pretty hefty bill for something that you're using that could be the backbone of what you're trying to put out and produce. A lot of restaurants and stuff use it for things like that. So again, the volume versus what you might get on a holiday season, it's just weird. But they backtrack, they fix it up.
Yeah.
So we're good now.
Vimeo is owned by a big Hollywood agency, Barry Diller's IAC. So I wouldn't expect them to be like altruistic and all nice and store your videos here.
And to be fair, it's not free to host the quality videos that are being put up on Vimeo either.
Well, like, you don't set the stage though. Is YouTube? It's giving it away. What's, you know? I mean, YouTube is amazing, right?
Like I said, McDonald's.
Yeah,
they're global. They're on every corner. They've got the infrastructure, the bandwidth, the advertising. That's the other thing, too, that's nice about Vimeo. Like, I'm not getting spammed by soccer ads and other things. Like, I'm just there to consume
for your use,
quality content.
It's the right place.
For certain things, yes.
For certain things. But we still post on YouTube for mass appeal.
Yes.
Yeah.
Like I said, I can't
and
say
it's free.
Enough. Yeah. Free. It's free as for me. Right. And they want, like, you can put up, like, 3-day movies now. Like, I remember when YouTube, you had, like, 2 minutes. Then it went to 10 minutes. Mm-hmm. So you lost your mind.
So TikTok's allowing you to put a half an hour up now.
That's right.
Is that good or bad?
That is great.
Who wants to watch a half-hour TikTok? Huh?
Well, first of all, when it gets to be a half an hour, it's no longer a TikTok. It's a podcast.
Yeah, I know.
Once they hit 10 minutes, it wasn't TikTok anymore.
Yeah.
Because in general, you know, as a ranteer myself, it's hard to consume any more than, you know, 2 minutes at a time with someone blabbing about
swipe
one
up, swipe up,
but
swipe up.
You get 10 minutes in there, you get half an hour in there, now I could do a half of a power hour, I could have a video gaming session, you know, we could do all kinds of fun stuff in 30 minutes on the TikToks.
Have you looked at the Amazon Amp platform? That's their new Clubhouse, basically. But they have a deal with all the record labels, so you can put in music.
That's very interesting to me.
Yeah, and you could DJ it, and you could take calls. That's kind of interesting. We did it on Wednesday. I did a pre-show for This Week in Google. I got a whole listener. It was so exciting.
Well, so that was going to be my statement to why I haven't really tried it. Because everything, if I mention anything of Amazon product to someone, they look at me like I'm trying to beat them and rob them. Hey, have you watched such and such? Oh, where's it at? On Amazon Prime. Now, they have Amazon. They have Amazon Prime. Everybody has it.
But they don't want to.
They refuse to go to it. Like, this show is amazing.
Interesting.
Okay, no.
Yeah.
My daughter said, I asked my daughter, we have Apple Music and we have Spotify. And I'm like,
we don't need all that.
I was like, can you talk your mom into paying for Spotify?
Yeah.
And so I can just have Apple and you can have both.
Yeah.
And so she says to me, she's like, no, because mom uses Amazon Music. And we both looked at each other like, ugh. And I know better. And I still did it. And I'm like, your mom's using that.
You know what? Amazon
it's free
Music
and it's
is
what she
HD,
pays for.
It's high she res. Doesn't.
But again, in my mind, I'm like, Amazon Music. And I forgot, I have it. It's free to me. I've never turned it on.
As a Prime member.
Never thought of pressing pressing the button. So
that's kind of interesting.
It's very interesting the way that the,
is Amazon a bad brand name now?
They're Amazon. They're the yin and yang of the universe.
It's like
everyone
saying Walmart
hates them, but they need them.
It's like saying Walmart.
And they're
nobody wanted Walmart music.
And their products, like I said, like I watch a lot of their premium content on shows, but it took me a minute to get into it. And now that I'm into it, I pop it on like once a month, find something new, great, cool. It's not Netflix yet, but when you tell another person, even though they have it, general people don't want to touch their where do I put my photos? Hey, you have a Prime account, right? Just move it there. Everyone's so upset about Google saying they're going to charge. I said, well, you got Prime. I'm not giving Amazon my photos. I'm not doing that. I'm like, but you did it for Google. Like, you trust Google.
Yeah.
But you don't. I'm like, it's free to you. I'm trying to give you the free option because that's what you want. But that's the mindset from general public about Amazon products besides Amazon.
So speaking of Clubhouse, apparently Putin forgot to shut the door on Clubhouse. He's closed down.
Finally finds a use for it.
Yeah, maybe we shouldn't say this out loud, but I don't think Putin's watching Twit.
No, don't
think
so.
Probably okay. Maybe one of his apparatchiks is keeping an eye on us. Russians have blocked Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. TikTok was suspended services in Russia because of the, quote, fake news law. Telegram says we're not going to give any user data over, so it's widely used. And apparently nobody knew about Clubhouse. So Clubhouse is now a great place for Russians to go to share their dislike of the war, which I think is kind of interesting. I haven't used Clubhouse in a long time, but
Clubhouse is a weird party. Like when I check in, like it's I think it's because of who I follow. It's either NFTs or
it was too much Bitcoin, bro, for me, and that's why I stopped doing it.
You know, or like the groups are very finite. So sometimes I've stumbled into like women's groups, and I'm like, am I allowed to be here? Can I listen? I won't say anything. I just want to listen and find out what's going on. So
if you made your handle Owina, you could go in.
I could definitely get away with it.
Yeah,
I could definitely get
away with it. I just wasn't bad buying a new phone just so I could use it.
To use Clubhouse.
Yeah.
Well, so this is what's, I think, interesting about Clubhouse. It continues on, even though it's not, you know, the flavor of the month anymore. But it is a great place for an affinity group to go.
Yeah.
And so
yeah.
Russians have discovered this as a way that they can freely talk about the war. And they, in fact, there are apparently hundreds and hundreds of channels now of anti-war sentiment in Clubhouse.
It's good they can find community and have messaging, because that's the one thing, again, thankfully for us being in America, we haven't had wars at our shore. But when people don't understand is that even on any side of conflict, there are people inside that conflict that do not agree with what the leaders are doing. So for them to have some kind of outlet and community is great, because at the end of the day, when you sit there and say, oh, well, we want the Russians to overthrow what... Okay, it's hard to do that when they shut down everything on you. So I'm glad that they're finding an outlet, which most things happen in the world. Human beings find a way to find each other, and so that's good.
Apparently, according to the Wall Street Journal, Westerners are using text messaging to text normal everyday Russians about the war, send them messages about the war. A whole database of 140 million email addresses and 20 million cell phone addresses was leaked by a group of Polish programmers, and Americans and others in the West have been calling and emailing saying...
I hear that, and all I think is I'm sitting here getting robocalls. How did they get my number? Who is this? Yeah. What is going on?
Yeah, wait a second. Are we the baddies now?
Your auto warranty's expired, and Putin.
That would freak me out. I'm like, what?
Anyway... Let's take a little break. Fun to have real people in studio. Not drunk, though. You sure you don't want a beverage at this point?
Where's the liquor cabinet? Adult beverage? I'll have one.
It's over there.
I'm an adult.
It's over there. You go find something.
Pay these bills.
Go explore while I pay the bills. Our sponsor today, this segment, is New Relic. Love New Relic. And if you're a software engineer, a sysadmin, a DevOp, you're going to love New Relic, too. Because you know the worst thing in the world. Middle of the night. Phone rings, beeper goes off, text messages start pouring in. Something's broken. The server's down. The database is chugging. Your queries aren't going through. And you're going, oh, no. And here's the problem for more than half of the companies out there in the world. And this is from a study from New Relic. they don't have network observability implemented. Only half of all organizations have implemented observability for networks and systems. And if you don't have it and something goes wrong, you're in the dark. You don't know. But it won't happen if you get New Relic. New Relic can tell you instantly what's wrong so you can fix it and go back to bed. New Relic combines now six, they keep expanding, but they have up to 16 different monitoring programs. Things you might buy separately or try to use separately. But, you know, that's hard too if you've got 20 different programs and you're going from this one to that one and your team's trying this. This is all unified, one place, one stack, one UI. You get application monitoring, APM, so you can see exactly what's going on in your apps and your microservices. If you're using Kubernetes, you'll love Pixie. Great observability. Distributed tracing lets you see all your traces without management headaches, so you can find and fix issues fast. Network performance monitoring. No more data silos. You get a system-wide correlated view, so you can immediately pinpoint the problem and fix it. And that's just four of the 16 monitoring apps. So many people have discovered New Relic, and once you do, you'll never go back. You can even pinpoint issues down to the line of code so you know exactly what went wrong and how to fix it. Dev and ops teams at DoorDash love New Relic. GitHub uses it. Epic Games. More than 14,000 companies use New Relic to debug and improve their software to keep the network running. Whether you run a cloud-native startup or a Fortune 500 company, it just takes 5 minutes to set up New Relic in your environment. And here's the really good news. It's free. It's the whole New Relic platform and 100 gigabytes of data per month, free forever. You don't even have to give them a credit card. Because they know if you love it, you're going to want it, and you're going to want more. The next 9 p.m. call, just waiting to happen. Get New Relic before it does. You can get access to the entire New Relic platform, 100 gigabytes of data per month, free, forever, no credit card required. Sign up at newrelic.com/twit. N-E-W-R-E-L-I-C, newrelic.com/twit. Why suffer with ignorance? Get observability in your network today. newrelic.com/twit. We thank them so much for supporting Twit. All right, we reassemble. You couldn't find any liquor, huh?
So we took a shot.
You got a La Croix instead? Oh, no, you got a Crush, Orange Crush. That's a classic. I didn't know they still made that stuff.
Well, not only do they make it, it's fully stocked out there. we drank some of your moonshine something.
Did you put something in there?
No, we just
took it straight. Tried to shorten it. Just like, wow, that's really
of
sweet.
Of what, mezcal? Or you don't even know what it was?
Whiskey Moonshine.
That's something. The one.
Something called Whiskey Moonshine.
Yeah, okay. They had a name before that.
Okay,
but,
I don't know.
Yeah, well, I'm not driving tonight.
And obviously the good stuff is locked away somewhere, so I need your keys.
Oh, no, I know. You know what? The problem is I'm a little busy here.
Oh, yeah, you got to show me.
I'd gladly show you. It's in the cabinet above, up above the where all the vinegar is. And the salt and pepper in this.
All right.
Up above there.
Well, let's talk about a show, and I'll run on to
check again. There's
a cabinet
full of liquor.
I'll check. I'll just look for the fanciest bottle. I might have already taken it as my to-go cup, but we'll discuss that later.
Let's see. MGM deal done. Amazon gets $8.5 billion worth of nothing. Actually, they get James Bond.
Yeah.
Half of James Bond.
They didn't
Bond.
Even get all of James Bond?
Well, it's like Eon Productions. The Broccoli family owns part of James Bond
ones.
And they have to they own part of James Bond period, and they have to they produce it and they have to approve of it and God. Stuff so it's not like
this
lock,
shows
stock, and barrel.
You how desperate companies are
for content
and especially for catalog.
Well, not only are you desperate, but you're in a situation where there's four quarters on the table, and if you take two of them, there's only two left, and I better get one, and I've got to get it now. So because the whole sharing and cutting off things, it makes people upset. You know, people want to look at Netflix and watch The Office every day for the rest of their lives. And when it comes off for 6 months, they lose their mind. So, you know, you got to – it's a finite source. So
I think the Amazon one also really sort of showed up the problem you've got in regulation in this country, in that I'm pretty sure Khan would have liked to have blocked this deal if she'd had the ability. But because the Senate is – not getting a new Democratic FTC
You're
member.
You're talking about Lena Khan, the chairman of the FTC.
Yeah.
So she doesn't have enough votes on the commission.
She doesn't have enough votes because they're refusing to appoint a Democratic FTC member. And it's a pain because you desperately need more competition in this country, and B, there's just a Wrath of Khan headline waiting to happen there. So, you know.
So finally you get Tomb Raider, Obsidian, Creed 3, Legally Blonde 3, some of the big titles. They're
Yeah, don't forget Stargate, one of my
Stargate's
favorite
Lost franchises.
Not
gonna knock Stargate, yeah.
That's
yeah.
an Amazon property now.
All right.
Did you see, though, the EU approved this deal with the sort of saddest backhand to MGM ever? They said, we approve this because MGM's content cannot be considered must-have.
Ouch! Ouh, come on, man.
Still worth $8.5 billion.
Ben-Hur, Poltergeist, G.I. Joe.
Burn.
Okay, G.I. Joe, not so much.
The Rocky series, that's pretty good stuff, yeah.
Rocky stuff. Series. Yeah. But MGM, classic MGM, already sold off back in
yeah,
the day, in the Ted Turner
the
era,
yeah.
most of its catalog. So
right.
what MGM is as a holding company is a very weird collection of catalog stuff and franchises. That's why it's not considered a must-have.
Yeah.
But it was something. And I really keep wondering where the musical chairs game is going to stop, because there's still some stuff out there. I read a piece this week about how now that CBS and Viacom have merged together and become Paramount, the next order of business is for them to see if they can find somebody to unload CBS television to, because once they get rid of their broadcast network, they can sell the rest of the company to Comcast or to Warner Media,
yeah,
right? To one of the other companies. I
mean, and they're doing that because they get annoyed. One, the Paramount beast that is a new streaming service is like, okay, but Warner Brothers owns a lot of the CBS content. So I'm not going to go sign up for Paramount because I can get Sheldon and stuff like that on HBO Max. And so it's a tug
of war.
All those
deals are still there, yep.
It's a tug of war of what's going on and who's doing what. And I'll tell you what, Mr. Leo Laporte.
What, Mr. Vanderpump Rules?
I might come to you and ask you for your catalog this week in Texas. Yeah.
We got a lot of old shows.
Yeah, we got a lot of old shows.
Come on, shows. They don't age well.
Look.
If you want to know about Windows Vista, I got a show for you.
Don't lie to the people, Uncle Leo. It's good content.
You can broker that deal.
I can run a streaming service. I'm smart. Not like people say.
Hey, exactly. There is on Twitch a stream of ancient computer shows, most of which they're getting from the Internet Archive, like Old Computer Chronicles.
Oh, yeah.
They have a show of mine, which I wish I thought where there were no copies left, but apparently they got one. And they just run that 24/7. I don't know if anybody watches it.
Somebody's watching it.
It must be, right?
Yeah. Somebody's watching it. Yeah. Somebody's watching us right now.
Really happening is broadcast is dying and streaming is coming.
Yeah, or at least broadcast is a very different business from streaming, and it has a bunch of regulations because it's over the air, airwaves, right? And
so you think CBS will continue?
Yeah, well, actually, if you look back to the Fox deal where the Murdoch family sold Fox to Disney, but they split off the Fox broadcast network
and the
cable channels
that
do news, and they took that separately. And one of the reasons is that Disney owns ABC, and so they could not sell the Fox broadcast network to the owner of ABC, so they split it off. I think that's the thought process behind what may be going on at Paramount, is they need to unload CBS and CBS News. And there's a business to be run there, but it's a real different business, and it's not a growth business.
It's not the same as the
streaming. It's not going to excite investors. Yeah. And then they can sell their catalog to the highest bidder.
Right.
And the truth is, Paramount, I mean, somebody will get Star Trek out of it. Somebody will get... There's some good stuff in the catalog, but they can then try to auction it to Netflix or Disney or Warner Media or Comcast or Apple or Amazon and get somebody to buy it, because none of those buyers want TV stations. They just don't want that.
Well, even CNN is going to streaming. They're going to launch in a week. CNN Plus. Is that them saying the future is this, or that's them hedging their bets?
It's both.
You talk about this a lot on your show.
Yeah. I have a podcast called Downstream that people can check out. That's all about this stuff. But CNN is a moneymaker, because every person who subscribes to cable gets money, puts money, some of their cable bill goes to CNN. It's just part of how cable TV works. And so that's a lot of money, and they don't want to give it up. So they're building a separate streaming service that won't anger their cable partners and won't shut off that spigot, which is going to shut off, but not yet, and they can build this other thing. But with Discovery coming in to buy them...
How dumb do they think cable operators are?
I guess CNN's not the same as CNN well, Plus.
I think it's more about the contract, right? I think they have some contractual
That was a problem with Tech TV.
Yeah.
You could not, and this is way back in the day, 20 years ago, but even then, the cable contract said you may not put more than 10 minutes of your content on the internet. Because we want people watching the cable.
Yeah, so, and it's too much money. It's a little like sports, like baseball or something like that. It's
can't
too much money from cable. They can't give it up. So they're trying to build a parallel product with some of the same names so that they can start at least building a foundation in streaming so that when the cable money goes away or becomes untenable, then they have something that they can migrate to. That's what they're doing. It's a hedge.
We're at the point right now where I just wish that cable would just say, hey, look, you can't afford Netflix, Hulu, Disney, ESPN, CNN Plus. You know what you're doing? You're ending up paying for the cable service that you said was $200 and $300 a month. Let me do this for you. Let me just knock the bill down to cable TV with your internet for $100. Come back to us. The dinosaur is now the meteorite, and let's right this ship. Because as everything we say is network media is dying, my God. Again, just to run off the list, Paramount, Disney, who can afford besides us in this bubble to pay for everything? And then they get mad because people are sharing.
Well, that's why
I'd share gas right now if I could, because when something gets too high, you got to figure
that's
out
why
a way.
Oil is a good business. You can't share gas.
Hey, a carpool. He got my back on that.
Netflix is going to start putting up a little notice saying, I see you're sharing that password there.
So the problem is with that, they don't know any difference. I'm going to tell you, I use YouTube TV. And as I come out here and I'm traveling, it says, are you leaving your area? Have you moved? That's fine. But guess what? Everyone in the Northeast, there's 62 people on my YouTube account that tip me $25 a month. They don't know my name. I can say whatever I want. YouTube, where's the camera? YouTube in the Northeast, I have 62 people using YouTube TV account. I got them all sending me $20
and they send you money?
Oh, well, it's $20 is better than $65, isn't it?
Yeah. And
well,
for
then
you,
there you
it's
go.
A land windfall.
I mean, I'm doing all right, Uncle Leo. There's things out there that we can do in America. But I get the notice when I leave the region. Otherwise,
you're in Atlanta now.
But no one else gets the thing that says, oh, there's 22 people on your account right now. So again, go ahead,
they're
Netflix, and do what you want to do.
They're working on it.
You
know,
that notice is up there because of a cable TV contract. It's the same thing, right?
Yeah.
They're like, you must not serve
your
this
locals
out of
are
the
now,
locals.
Yeah.
You can't watch the Lakers game even though you're in L.A.
So
because you're a Philly
they're
guy.
Not checking
Did you
for
move?
Password sharing. They're checking to make sure you're not watching Philly games.
I have Fubo TV, and it's got an interesting thing where you can take your tablet or your laptop anywhere, but if it's a box, a set-top box, your account can only be in one region, and they will. That's the one where they'll be like only one region at a time for an Apple TV. And I always thought that was really hilarious because it's like anybody can use it on an iPad. Like nobody cares.
Exactly.
It's only if you hook it up to a TV that they even check. But you're right. I mean, this Netflix thing is happening. I think it's starting in South America now. But yeah, they're threatening this. You know, are you in the household?
But see, I mean, I share my Netflix with my kids.
Yeah, me too.
They're in my household. They don't live with me, but that's my family. And they also share my Apple account.
And we travel. And sometimes a family travels and some of them travel and some of them don't. So how do they really
stop
this?
And that's what I mean about the pushback of it. Because if you really wanted to enforce this, guess what? You're going to lose money. At the end of the day, that's what I mean
people
about
will
coming
cancel,
back to
you
the,
mean?
Not only are they going to cancel, they're going to find a loophole. They're going to go somewhere else.
Right.
Because
this was back in the cable TV days, this was a big cat and mouse game where people would split the cable and they would. And I remember DirecTV or was it somebody? You would share the box. Oh, maybe it was like one of those
cable guy. It would make a hot box for you.
Yeah,
hook you up with all the channels
for you. And then, but then what they did is there was this real cat and mouse game. They'd sent this in shards. They'd send a little detection program down a bit at a time, and then it would assemble itself. And suddenly, everybody'd lose their cable, and they would go back and forth. Was it TiVo? I kept trying to remember who it was. Somebody in the chat room will remember. So Netflix, one of the things Netflix is going to offer, and this is in Chile, Costa Rica, and Peru, this is what you were talking about, is, well, if you want to share your account, you can. Just pay a little more. Pay a bit more.
I'm paying too much.
What they want you to do is think they know. So you want to be honest. So you say, okay, fine, I'll give you a little bit more.
And you're not going to get a lot of people with that.
You're saying what they're not going to say is, we have no idea.
Because there's a base of people. speed limit, 65 miles an hour. Do you know how many people only go 70 because it says 65?
Yeah, 4 miles or
because
miles
they've
over.
Told themselves, I'm good with a little bit of cheating, but I'm not really trying to break the law.
Yeah.
So sending this message out is going to get them a
just
little bit of money.
Just enough to feel daring.
Yeah. So it is going to get them a little money and make some shareholders happy. Matter of fact, that's really what this is for. This is for shareholders and to make them be proactive and look, we're doing something, we're trying. Yeah. Look over here. Nobody look behind the curtain. We're doing it because I'll tell you what, Netflix, you're not going to stop me. You're not going to stop
me. There is an interesting a business model in there, though, in that if you're trying to actually, you know, if someone isn't a Netflix customer and you're trying to explain to them, oh, I saw this show, you should really check it out, and then you can pay like a one-off fee just so they can view one episode, that might be quite lucrative in the long run. But I agree with what you're saying. They are taking the piss on this somewhat.
No.
Interesting. See, this is good. This is why I got to have these people to explain this to me.
Yeah.
Because I don't understand it, and you come in, you explain it all to me.
I'm down here on the ground level. You're on the 51st floor, Uncle Leo. You're
you still have that guy, not so bright,
not a bright guy,
not a bright guy, but selling.
He kind of got put out of business.
Selling the fire sticks over at the softball games.
He's not out of business. He's back. He got put out of business for a little bit because they shut down the fire stick hack. But now he's got a subscription base where he pays some company like $100 and he charges you $10 a month like a cable company.
Yeah.
And you get all the channels.
Yeah.
So he's got like 1,000 people paying him $10 a month. I'm just waiting for the FBI to kick down his door. But my guy is back
in
business.
It's not that different from what you're doing.
What are you talking about? You two, don't talk to me. I'm just here telling you. I'm giving real world examples of what others are doing and I've done nothing wrong.
Microsoft says, no, we didn't mean to publish this externally. People with Windows 11 developer editions were noticing there's an ad in my File Explorer.
It's not the first time they've done this either.
No. And they didn't say we're not going to do it. They said this wasn't supposed to be
published. We got caught. Yeah. Okay. Thanks. Terribly sorry.
This is an example of what you might see. I think they've turned it off now. But you're browsing around, looking at your PC, your My Documents folder, and you get this. And by the way, it looks like an alert, right? It's a triangle with an exclamation mark. Write with confidence across documents, email, and the web with advanced writing suggestions from Microsoft Editor. And they're really trying to upsell you a feature for Office.
I don't know if you may even already have,
by the way.
Yeah, it's called Grammarly.
It's like Grammarly.
Do you get spammed down by them as well? Because, I mean,
by the way, Grammarly, Ukrainian company.
Yes.
Yeah.
They are a sponsor. And a lot of people are signing up for Grammarly just to kind of send money to Ukraine.
Oh, that's a good. I mean, that's a good idea. Yeah. I was going to say, as a professional journalist, it's just kind of like it's a bit grating when every time I try and fire at some.
You
music
think
on
you're
YouTube.
A writer? That's the difference.
I am a writer.
There are a lot of people.
I've been doing it for 25 years.
Lisa swears by it because I've been writing
for 42 years.
Respect. I use it, but there are lots of those moments where it's like, oh, you're trying to use style and creativity. Red underline. I'm like, no, just forget it.
You know what?
It.
She loves it. Sometimes it'll say, and we're not doing a Grammarly ad here, but sometimes it'll say, that was a little harsh, that email.
Oh, interesting.
Maybe you'd like to just soften it a little bit. And she appreciates that because she's very direct.
She is a businesswoman. She is matter of fact.
She doesn't waste words in an email. She says what she needs, and that's it.
And I appreciate that. Yeah. She gets right to the point. So that way, like, you know, sometimes you get an email. It's nice to chuck and jive on a phone call, but I'm going through 13 emails
today. I agree.
I need to get
short
to the
and
point.
Sweet.
Yeah.
But Grammarly will say, well, that was a little brusque.
Grammarly helps me out because I write as I speak, and as you can tell, I speak very loosely. So it does tighten me up when I'm in work mode. It fixes
anyway,
me
they are a Ukrainian company. Skylum, which does Luminar AI, is a great photo editor. They're Ukrainian. MacPaw,
which does they have apps of their own, and they also have that Mac app, like Netflix for apps, which is called I can't even remember it.
Yeah,
there are a lot of really
surprisingly
good,
large number. Yeah, a lot of very
Ukrainian
talented
tech companies.
Ukrainian programmers out there. So we're keeping them in our thoughts. I don't even know. What's going to happen?
SetApp is the name of
SetApp. That's right.
Of the streaming service, and you know they're all distributed, and they've got a lot of people outside of country, and I think that they Ukrainians have had seven-ish years of awareness that Russia might invade their country. So I think a lot of Ukrainian business people have done the thing where our servers are on Amazon. Mm-hmm. That's what Grammarly said.
Right.
And we've got business offices all over the world, and we have tried to get our people who are in Ukraine to be safe or to get them out and have them work outside of the country. So those businesses are largely, you know, they can still operate, but obviously their hearts are back in Ukraine because that's where they're from.
Yeah. I mean, there's also, we were discussing this amongst ourselves last week. There's also the concern, and I think we're seeing this a lot with tech companies that have offices in Russia. There's concern that the Russian authorities will put pressure on locals to allow them access to corporate networks, maybe even allow them to put malware onto systems.
There's concern about Kaspersky, for instance.
I saw the German report.
I saw
Eugene's response, and it was a bit weaselly, to be honest.
You know, it's funny. Eugene Kaspersky, whose company's named after him, is very well liked in the West. He goes to Davos. You've probably met him.
I've got wankered with him.
Exactly. You've gotten wankered with him. I don't know what that means. But
he's an interesting
you're
person.
Close.
But someone who has a walrus penis bone on his desk.
I feel like a charm offensive that was very effective. And he has a lot of defenders in the West. But at the same time, I think there's legitimate concern that
Putin could say to him at any point, give us access, and he'd have to give it up.
Yeah.
Then again, the same could happen with under the Patriot Act in this country.
True.
But no, I mean, he's genuinely a nice guy. Kaspersky has had a lot of really bad press with no real evidence to support it. But and he does say that he's offered to, you know, have an independent third party go through his code. But at the end of the day, that doesn't really
matter.
You
don't know
where
it's stored. And one of the things Kaspersky does, like a lot of antiviruses, is when it finds something suspicious, maybe not even something in its definitions, but something suspicious, it uploads it to the server. And that, in fact, was how the NSA spy tools leaked. Now, it was a stupidity on the part of an NSA contractor. Hmm. Nevertheless,
but stupidity is one of those central computer failings which will always happen. You know, the layer 8 problem is always going to be with us.
PEBCAC is the word of the day from John, our board op. Problem exists between chair and keyboard. Are you telling me PEBCAC? Because PEBCAC? No, okay. SpaceX sent a bunch of Starlink terminals. Last I heard it was about 15,000, might even be more, because the Starlink app is now the number one most downloaded free app in Ukraine, according to Sensor Tower. 21,000 downloads on iOS and Android, mostly from Ukraine. It has become the way, I guess, to get internet in a country where the internet may be a little rocky. That $21,000 was downloads was a week ago. I haven't seen anything more recently.
When he first announced that, I was kind of like,
I thought it was
this has publicity stunt.
It was like sending the submarine to the tide.
Yeah. And then insulting the person that actually got them out. But that's a story for another time.
It seemed very Elon.
It seemed like he was jumping on the bandwagon.
Sending CPAP machines to hospitals instead of ventilators, that kind of. He's got a reputation.
I think, he does. And it's an earned reputation. But in something like this, I'm impressed, actually. They managed to get the hardware through. Because without the hardware, it's just fluff and nonsense.
Right.
But they have apparently managed to get some decent amounts of hardware through.
I've seen pictures of trucks unloading the terminals. So that's impressive. At least tens of thousands.
And well, that's well now, done. If you could get some units into Russia as well, so much the better.
Now, I know you're a Formula One fan.
I was up at 6 o'clock this morning to watch the race.
Oh, where was the first race of the season?
First race of the season, Bahrain, this morning, 8 a.m. PT.
Don't tell me anything.
It's
a more competitive Formula One this year because...
I've got to say, it was one of the best races I've seen in a long
Drivers
time.
Drivers are more important than they used to be.
Yep, and the aerodynamic changes on the cars mean that you can get much closer racing.
They don't need the DRS as much.
DRS is actually really useful because we saw that was a classic, like 4 or 5 laps with the lead changing.
And when you get within a second or two of the car,
you can open the back flap.
Yeah.
That'll give you an extra 18 kilometers an hour very briefly.
Which is a clever thing. So Google is sponsoring the McLaren vehicle. I don't know if you noticed this.
I laughed myself sick over that after the end of the race.
It's got Android on it. It's got the hubcaps apparently are the colors of the Chrome browser.
Yeah, unfortunately, and they see McLaren they're a venerable team. They're very good at what they do. Last couple of seasons, they've been challenging Ferrari for third or fourth place.
They've got Daniel Ricciardo. They've got Lando.
They have Danny Ric. They have Lando. Great driver pairing.
Yeah.
But after today, I can say that Google might be considering
did they not?
Going for
it. Don't tell me. I'm going to watch the race tonight.
Okay. put it this way. Okay. Without wanting to give too much away, it was physically painful to watch Danny Ric trying to get past a Williams this morning.
Williams?
Exactly.
Williams?
Can I jump in and ask you a question?
Hmm.
When did the F1 thing start with you watching F1 racing?
When did I start watching F1?
Oh, he's a Brit.
1970s.
He's okay, a Brit.
That makes more sense. What about you?
You know why. Netflix, Drive to Survive,
right? So can I just tell you that... I watched a show.
I got excited.
Okay. So it's like Wordle. It's like crack cocaine. You got hooked on drugs from a friend. Aunt Pruitt, I went over. He made me an old fashioned.
He's really into it too.
He put on an episode of F1, tried to get me.
Survive,
what is
baby.
Going on with you people and this F1 stuff? Oh, man. Netflix has done it again. Because if I hear F1 one more time from people who
the
know
the F1
nothing,
drivers and teams pretty much hate the Drive to Survive,
yeah,
folks.
Max Verstappen refuses to have anything to do with it.
The best driver in the league.
For good reason, because they just make stuff up. I mean, in the last season... Okay.
But it's been very good for Formula 1.
Oh, no. It's brought a huge number of people into
huge
the sport.
I am
very glad about it. But I even binged watched it over last weekend and sort of live tweeted the whole thing.
It makes it exciting. It's like a reality TV show.
But they do make stuff up.
Well, it's reality
TV. You know,
TV.
I mean, it's like manufacturing. It's a docudrama.
Yeah.
You know, and
Jason, are you on drugs?
No.
Okay.
No, I'm clean.
The F1 drugs.
And I'm not high on F1 at this moment.
Are you a wordler?
I am a wordler.
I'm a wordler.
Yes, gotcha, see?
I'm a wordler.
I see. Never
when
played
I see the
it.
Whole world jumping off a bridge, I sit back and say to myself, yeah. Not me, not today.
Oh, no,
and
I say,
the wordle, not
show
the
me
one.
The bridge, baby.
Not,
here
not,
I come.
Not the F1, so, just the wordle.
I will tell you that every other sports league of any kind is extremely aware of what happened with Drive to Survive.
Yeah,
like,
it was huge.
Because it has driven so many new fans and yeah. so much interest to that sport.
Yeah.
And so get ready, because there's going to be Drive to Survive clones for every
sport.
Single yeah. sport.
There already
is,
you know, and I bet you it was a little inspired by, there's a very good series about the NFL where they cover one team.
Hard Knocks.
Very
and
good.
It does that for them, because there are people that I know that don't watch football, but watch the Hard Knocks like it's a soap opera.
And this
like
is,
they're not really into football, but they watch those. Like, it's their thing to watch. And I'm like, just watch it. They're like, no, it's not the same. It's not the back drama. Right. It's not the private conversation. Yeah. And I watched the F1.
But when you understand what goes into a football team, what goes into planning, the way they study the opponents and all that stuff, it makes it more interesting.
Yeah. I mean, he made me watch an episode of F1. I fully understand why. Again, it's crack cocaine. I understand why people are on these drugs. I watched one episode of it. It's very well shot. It's very clean.
And they have amazing access.
And
except for Max Verstappen.
And if you don't know anything.
They didn't have Mercedes in the first season. They wouldn't have talked to them.
And I don't know anything about F1, but just watching one episode.
Oh, you learn a lot.
You learn a lot of whatever they're teaching.
So,
I don't know if it's the right thing or not, but I'm learning a lot of something in one episode. I was like, wow, okay.
You get a sense
didn't
of the drama,
that.
Who the drivers are.
You do. It gives you, it's very good in terms of, in some regards of.
The thing F1's perfect for this, because there's only 20 teams. There's only 40.
10 teams,
only 20 drivers.
20 drivers.
So it's a very compact, easy thing to follow. There are a lot of races all of a sudden.
23 this season, yes.
But used to be a little more constrained. Mm-hmm. And so it's doable. The only thing is, in the U.S., you have to get up at 6 in the morning to watch.
Well, generally, the races on U.S. time Pacific are in the wee small hours in the morning.
Yeah.
So I subscribe to a streaming service.
Yeah, exactly.
And that way I can watch the race and then pause it and go and make a cup of tea and that sort of thing.
My YouTube TV is set up to record every race. And if nobody like Ian tells me what happened,
You seriously do not want to miss today's race.
All right.
Watch it right to the end.
Talladega Nights.
It goes right down to the
Ricky Bobby story?
Yeah, the memoirs of Ricky Bobby.
It goes right down to the wire.
I'm going to bring it back to tech. Well, of course, F1, it couldn't be more technical. This is really
one of the reasons driving computers.
They're spaceships, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty amazing.
I mean, if you look at, if you actually follow one driver around on, you know, for one lap, you'll see they're reconfiguring their engine, their brake balance.
That's amazing.
Is the thing. Yeah. You're basically reprogramming a computer while pulling 5G corners.
And the physics, and that's what's interesting about this year's cars, they are using a lot more of the body to push them down into the ground. The physics of it is fascinating, too.
Yeah. There's has caused problems because they're particularly Mercedes are porpoising an awful lot, and that's quite dangerous.
Whatever it is, I don't want it. Don't porpoise. Whatever you do. So when is esports going to get a drive to survive? Because it needs that to push
esports
forward.
Well, that's why I told Ant. When he tried to tell me about watching, I'm like, I was driving F1 in Monaco in 2006, okay? My Xbox had me. I was living in Monaco. I know what's right and left to take, okay? I know what I'm doing. I don't need F1 show. Get me my Xbox back, and I could be an F1 racer. Because he said, I really would like to drive one of those cars. I had to let him know he's not a jockey.
Last time we were in Monaco, I got a hotel on the hairpin turn.
Oh, Raskas.
Yeah.
I've driven down that in a normal car, and that worried me.
It's amazing. They got a nice plaque there, and then we walked the most of the circuit, even through the tunnel there.
Yeah.
It's quite a thing.
Yeah. I've seen it in a video game. I've been there.
Yeah, you've been there. You've raced Monaco.
I have.
Yeah.
So I got a show for you, Leo. Start here.
Esports.
There's a documentary called Ecstasy of Order, The Tetris Masters. You can learn all about the search for the greatest Tetris players. And if you haven't seen it, go on YouTube for the Tetris Championships matches. It is actually kind of exciting to watch, but the announcers lose
I had no
it.
Idea they were
lose
Tetris champions.
It. Boom! This Tetris is for Johnny. Boom! This is Tetris for Dog.
A 10-year-old documentary about Tetris.
Yeah.
This is
about
how you get hooked
competitive
on drugs.
Tetris.
A friend comes and offers you free drugs, and what do you guys do? Click right on it, load it right
up. Let's just watch the preview. You can,
it's actually very
you
accurate.
Can rent it for $3. Yeah.
I believe that Tetris may well be the first virtual sport.
Oh, I thought that was pretty schnoy for a sec. Right.
Okay. So we've been talking for 10 years about the first virtual sport.
Yeah. Described as perfect, right? Because how would you improve it?
Not just a game. It's a history.
It's not just
an evolution.
See? It's Drive to Survive.
Yeah.
For Tetris.
Here's the problem. Danny Ricciardo looks like he goes to the bars. He knows some girls. He's a human. The people who play these games... Look
no,
at this.
No.
Look at these people.
You get your Netflix series. You're going to, a lot of the esports, actually not Tetris maybe, but a lot of the esports people, they are kind of becoming rock stars and they have their attitude. And like, it's going to happen.
The teams, for League of Legends and Dota 2 and these teams. Hmm. For some reason, MOBAs really seem
But I do enjoy watching like 14-year-old kids playing Tetris. And it's hilarious.
That's the other thing. You're watching somebody drive. You're watching somebody play football.
Yes.
There's emotion. There's... These guys, basically, you watch them play, they're slack jaw.
Yeah, because they're, exactly, because that's
focused.
How they win. Yeah, that's the hard thing about esports translating to be a drama is, so wait for VR esports, and then you'll see them flailing around and stuff.
So they've tried. They've had celebrities play on these teams and all sorts of
things. When you watch esports, they get hyped. They yell at each other. So like that. As much as an F1 racer can sit in his car and do this, and with a helmet on, I can't see his face.
Right.
I can't see his emotion.
Figured out.
Hold on,
get these guys going 80 miles an hour down a straightaway playing Tetris.
Playing Tetris, yes.
Now you got a sport.
No.
Yeah. Drag Tetris.
The last thing I'll say is these guys in F1, they remind me of like horse jockeys. They get out of these cars and they what are they, like 5'2", like 5'4"?
Say George Russell is just under 6 foot.
Oh, okay.
Your ideal height for a Formula One driver is about 5'7", 5'8".
Okay.
Yuki is well under that, but everyone loves Yuki. But it is a real problem for the taller drivers.
Yeah.
You can be too tall for the sport.
Yeah, Ant was, again, he was like, I would love to just do one lap. I was like, you wouldn't fit in one car. And you're an in-shape dude. Like, you're too big.
I've driven an F1 simulator, one of the factory teams. And you have an awesome respect for the people that can do that. Because they said, okay, well, do you want to go in on easy mode or do you want to go in on actual mode? And I said, oh, actual, of course. Donated the thing three times just on just trying to get it to move. It was amazing.
And you're just squished in there. I mean, I got stuck in that Tesla Roadster once, and I couldn't imagine being in the F1 video. I got stuck in Jason Calacanis' Tesla when he got his first Tesla.
I remember.
Yeah, fun times.
Okay.
Thank God it was a T-top. That's the only way I got out.
Actually, if you watch more of the Drive to Survive, you see almost all these drivers do play video games. They love.
Oh yeah,
the driving games they play.
Because if you look at the, I mean, one of the things they have to, they'll have, they've now got eye level cameras. So you can see exactly. It's very fun to watch those cameras.
You can pick
which driver you want, and you can have their actual view. But it does make you realize most of the stuff is muscle memory. You know, they're not in a position where they can see the corners. Mm. They have to know it exists.
Oh, yeah.
They walk the track.
They walk it many times. They really memorize games, it. Yeah, yeah.
To get into that muscle memory.
You can't be thinking, what am I going to do here? It's all got to be automatic. Yeah.
Yeah.
Let's take a little break. I think you're going to like this next sponsor, Owen J.J. Stone. This Week in Tech is brought to you by Coinbase. Have you ever heard of them? You know Coinbase.
I do know Coinbase.
Much coin, such base. If you've been following.
Right there in the top corner.
There it is.
Phone right there.
Top corner of his phone. He's got the Coinbase. If you've been following the cryptocurrency craze, now's the time to start getting involved. Coinbase makes it quick and easy to set up your own portfolio, to trade like a pro. I know everybody's kind of hearing about this stuff. Would you like to know more about it? Would you like to get involved? Backed by the world's leading investors, Coinbase. This is really important. Keeps your portfolio safe and secure, but lets you add some crypto into the mix. It's a trusted, easy-to-use platform for buying, selling, and spending cryptocurrency. And by the way, not just Bitcoin or ETH, a whole variety of cryptocurrencies. They support all the most popular digital currencies on the market. It's, you know, really making it accessible to everyone. You don't have to be a crypto bro to figure it all out. They offer portfolio management. They offer protection. They have learning resources, a mobile app. Actually, my daughter was very interested in all this, got Coinbase, so she could learn.
The thing I like. Not only do you learn, but they pay you to learn. So you read a certain article, you answer certain questions, and you can get $3, $5, whatever it is.
That's cool.
And so you earn money.
Look at that. You're learning and you're earning. You want to learn. Millions of people, over 100 countries, trusting Coinbase with their digital assets. Whether you're looking to diversify, just get started. If you're just searching for a better way to access crypto markets, it's free. It's easy. Coinbase, get the app. In fact, better than free. For a limited time, new users get $10 in free Bitcoin when you sign up today at coinbase.com/twit. coinbase.com/twit. $10 in free Bitcoin. This is a limited time offer. Don't wait. coinbase.com/twit. You'll see the terms and conditions if you go to that website at coinbase.com. coinbase.com/twit.
We're literally paying you to do it.
That's cool. I didn't actually know that you would have it and be into it and know all that, but I just thought maybe because you're hip.
Yeah.
You're like with the, you know, I'm with the latest stuff.
I'm all the stuffs, the things.
Yeah.
I can report from the liquor cabinet that it's called Dixie Moonshine.
Dixie Moonshine. That's what you guys
are. I can report. It's delicious.
I get it. Also, the Prosecco is there.
They're my best mates. You are?
I love you, man.
I love everybody in this podcast. Hey.
I've written a poem. Okay.
I will say it was like that. We grabbed a glass and had a shot of it. Then we're like, are we going to get back?
That's cute. It's like smoking in the boys' room. If you want to do that, you can do that in the next commercial. Amazon, it's been revealed, had a Project Iliad to discourage people from canceling their Amazon Prime accounts.
I've got to say, I read that, and I was kind of like, what if... Of course they've got something like this in place. Oh. I mean, you'd be shocked if they hadn't.
It worked. You may have run into this. This is from Business Insider. They got internal documents. So if you went, and this is 2017 era, but if you went to cancel Amazon Prime, before you could cancel, this is a dark pattern you will see everywhere. Before you could cancel, they started asking you a bunch of questions and offering you a bunch of offers. They launched this in 2017. Prime cancellations dropped by 14%. And when you're talking at the numbers Amazon's talking, that's a lot of money.
Yeah.
The multi-step cancellation process, a version of which remains active, according to Insider, it's not illegal, but there have been multiple complaints filed with the FTC saying you really got to look into these dark patterns. That's the new thing, dark patterns.
But should
and
be cold,
I think cold. Lena Khan is very aware of dark patterns. I wouldn't be surprised if the FTC is receptive. Mm.
Is this dark pattern new from Comcast Cable, what I've been dealing with?
I was about to.
For my life. Like, try to cancel a credit card or your cable company, and you will start crying and hang up and have to regroup and call back the next weekend. Much less of moving out of the state, a family member who is deceased, and you're saying, my father no longer lives. Mm. I need to close this account. It is hard.
Oh, but let me tell you.
What about free HBO? It's like, well, he can't.
When I close my Facebook account, literally, the first thing they do is they put up a picture of 20 of your friends and saying, they're really going to be sad to see you go. Yeah, they might as well play that. It's like, talk about guilt trip.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they don't actually have somebody literally call you and be like, look, I just got the word that you were thinking of canceling it. Are you really sure you have to tell me direct?
Here's some screenshots.
Wasn't there a case, I think, a couple of years ago about a journalist recorded himself trying to cancel Comcast? And it was an hour.
And so I used to use the trick of, I'm going to cancel, give me sale. And they did it. Then they got to the point where they're like, no sale, no nothing, cancel. And as soon as you leave, then they spam you to death with the sale to come back. And I'm like, I tried to negotiate with you, terrorists. It
didn't work.
And it didn't work. And now you want me to come back to this abusive relationship?
Now, I don't know if this works, but I was complaining about this to a friend. And she was just like, there's a shibboleth. There is a way around this. And what you do is you say, no, I'm actually moving in with my partner. And they already have Comcast.
Yeah.
And they're just kind of like, oh, fine, okay. And then, you know.
That sounds, like I said, that's a good trick.
But it's, making up
if they ask you who your partner is, you just say Leo Laporte.
He's got all the services.
Here's the screenshot. Hannah's trying to quit Amazon Prime. First thing says, Hannah, don't give up on movie night. You still have 7 days left. Then it says, Hannah, save $40.88 over 12 months by switching to annual payments. And then there's the top number one button, keep my membership, keep my membership. You press continue to cancel. Hannah, we're sorry to see you go. Please confirm the cancellation of your membership with not one, not two, not three, not four, but five completely confusing buttons.
Mm-hmm.
Good luck trying to figure out which button to cancel.
I'm amazed they didn't put a picture of sad kitten up there or something.
This and people trying to get customer service is the hardest thing to do with Amazon. And, so it amazes me, again, when I was working in stores during the pandemic, people were like, I can't get to customer service. And I'm like, oh, it's easy. When you know, it's fine. But most people have no idea that it's even possible to reach Amazon to talk to anyone. It's chat or nothing. And even that doesn't alleviate your problems. But, you know, they get you in that funnel. But you'll frustrate. I bought Final Cut Pro for my M1 Mac. Mm-hmm. After I did the horrible thing of I just did the demo because I didn't know I was getting back into the Mac life. I was like, let me download the demo.
Just to be clear, you don't really need the Ultra, do you?
No.
No.
You don't.
You don't really need the Ultra.
So,
frankly, the Max would be plenty, wouldn't it?
The Max would be overkill for a spreadsheet. Don't worry.
Lisa
just
walked in.
I got you. So I got my M1 Mini, and I wanted to check out Final Cut because everyone said it was optimized for it. I did the trial just because I didn't know I was getting back to the Mac life. When I got the trial, I was like, oh, this is actually legit. This is really good. Let me buy it. So I purchased it. They charged my card. They never sent me the activation.
Oh.
Now, let me tell you, I contacted Apple. I was on the phone for 12 hours. I gave up. No, not 12 hours. Let me lie. 4 hours the first time. I gave up. I waited 6 months, and I tried again. 4 more hours. They still never sent the email. The third time after 9 months, right before I got this, I said, I'm getting a professional machine. I need this. And I was about to pay for it again. 6 hours on the phone, they finally got me what I needed so I could get Final Cut on my laptop. So talking to someone in customer service was insane. I'm like, as much as Apple, I talked to 20 different people every call, and no one knew how to send me a code.
I'm very impressed. Like, Apple has a phone number, I have been trapped where you were trapped.
Call Apple, yeah.
Amazon, you mentioned Amazon. Amazon, like, good luck trying to find a phone number for Amazon to talk to a person. Like,
that's
good.
Absolutely,
where I find it is you Google, call Amazon customer support, and there are web pages elsewhere with the number.
Right.
Because Amazon does not want you to call. Because guess what? Every customer service call costs money
because
you have to
money.
Pay somebody.
Yeah.
So Amazon really doesn't want to talk to you.
Here from our chat room, Hakanos, I never heard of this site, accountkiller.com. And they have how to kill accounts, all kinds of accounts. This is how to delete your Amazon Prime account. But they have how to get rid of all kinds of stuff.
And there recently there have been some laws that, like, in some states at least, where if you sign up online, you have to be able to cancel online.
So, yeah.
Which is good.
Just the pro tip for all the listeners out in the world. You go to Amazon.com on any web browser.
Yeah.
You click the three dots in the left-hand corner. You scroll all the way down to customer service, and then you click request a call, and then they call you.
Ooh,
and
I like it.
That is the quickest, fastest way to do it. But again, we live in a mobile world. There's no way to do that on your phone.
Right.
You have to be on the web browser to get to it to happen. So again, when people are out and something's wrong, misdelivered, whatever they want to do, they have no way to get to anyone.
But the real question is, why would you ever want to kill your Amazon account? Are you insane? How do you get stuff?
Everybody's competing now. I got Walmart delivering to me the same day, no charge. Yeah. I've got Target out here.
Is buying from Walmart, though, really better in any way?
Oh, it might be better when I'm not paying a subscription.
Yeah.
For certain things.
They have their Prime account.
Well, people are now getting a lot of food delivered from Amazon. So it makes more sense for having these stores like a Walmart or a grocery store to be able to provide that.
Yeah.
And guess what? If I'm a person who is disabled in some way and maybe I can't afford, I'm on a fixed income and I don't use Amazon like that, but I can now get fruits, vegetables, food delivered to me for free with other options. The competition is great because it's making for other things to come out. But then again, we're at the same carrot and stick. How many subscriptions can I afford and survive before I'm back to paying $1 million?
Open up your Coinbase. Can you buy Bored Apes, ape tokens?
You could. I wouldn't suggest it at the moment.
The Bored Apes, who somebody told me had merged with the Bored Apes Yacht Club, had merged with the crypto zombies into a giant crypto NFT bonanza. The Bored Apes are, of course, the Bored Apes Yacht Club NFT project. They have announced their own crypto coin. Wow. The price of admission to purchase the cheapest of the 10,000 images on the Bored Apes Yacht Club is $240,000 worth of ETH.
Fools. And that is a discount.
The world now knows this is bogus, right? So, boogity boogity.
I've said this many times, and I'll say it again. How much would you pay for the Mona Lisa?
Oh, well.
Okay, here's my question to that. At one point, it had no real value.
It's tied to how much I could sell it for, isn't it?
Yes. It had no real value.
Yeah.
So anything that you design or divine or feel that is art to you, why would you pay for a McLaren versus a Ferrari?
Right.
And why is one more expensive than the other?
Well, at least you can drive that.
What is art? You look at pictures on the wall. Your emblem signifies Twit. When people see it and they know the brand, they know it. An apple. Every time you look at an apple, you think of an apple icon. What value does it have?
But its only value is if you can sell it to somebody, some other sucker, for more.
Or if you hold on to it and then begin, everyone becomes a sucker. Again, how much would you
pay for? If you hold on to it, it's still not worth anything.
How much would you pay for the Mona Lisa?
Well, nothing.
We're all suckers. We're human beings. You know how much money I spent on Apple? I'm trying to con you out of the ocean.
I'll give you $100. I'll give you $100 for the Mona Lisa.
Well, there we go.
Will you give it to me?
Yeah, I can print a picture up right now.
I was going to say, I think the French government might have
something
to say about that.
I'm sure we got a color printer in here somewhere.
And I will sell it to you for $50, but what I'm really selling to you is a web page that says Leo owns the Mona Lisa.
That's now you're talking half as much none of the value.
All right.
It's 100% of what Jay is.
Even if it were the real Mona Lisa.
I'll throw in a printout, too.
barring a solar flare
We're good to go with NFTs for people.
Thank goodness.
Beanie Babies. Why would people? What is the thing?
At least you get a baby.
Cabbage Patch. I still get a thing.
No, Leo. NFTs are for suckers.
Leo.
And they're coming to Instagram. Yay.
By the way, technically, Beanie Babies were also for suckers because the value of them all crashed to zero.
The only value of a Beanie Baby was the cuddle value.
Right. At least
if you bought
a
Beanie Baby to sell it on, that was dumb.
So yeah.
Well, it's
number one issue of a comic book in the 90s, right, too, right? Yeah. It's like, oh, this is going to appreciate in value. Yeah, well, I hope you like reading that comic book.
Are you a collector? Do you collect anything? Like,
No. I mean, old computers now, pretty much.
That's mostly because nobody will take them off our hands.
No, I go on eBay. I have a Mac Plus, a Mac 28 upgraded to a Mac Plus that I got up and running.
We should have sold you. We have the 20th anniversary Mac we got rid of.
Oh, you got rid of it?
Yeah. What happened to that, John? We just gave it away.
Oh,
I think.
God,
those go for money
on eBay.
Jason,
a lot
he
of
didn't
money.
Take you to the basement. You've never been in a basement?
Man.
Have you ever been in a basement?
No.
Oh.
Okay, after the show, we're all going into the basement.
So, oh, God, well.
Leo's,
tell my family I love them.
Leo's got Cybertron underneath
tell my
our
family
feet.
I'm selling them.
Most of his drones that he's crashed, but he has Cybertron under our feet right now.
There is no basement in this building. I just want you to know right now. You know, Trey Ratcliffe sent me an NFT. I don't know what I did with that. I mean, who cares?
You know what?
But he's making money. Yeah, he's making...
Yes.
I know. It's probably worth some. Yeah.
Do you know what?
I've got his other thing in my gym.
Yeah, but you don't... Yeah, I have a photo of his, but the NFT's not a photo. It's just NFT.
You know what's going to happen to you?
What?
You are going to be looking back at this moment. Remember, look me in the eyes right now for a second. You're going to remember this moment as the guy who also lost his password to his crypto wallet. These are the moments that will haunt you.
You know what's great about
10,
that?
15 years from now...
If I hadn't lost the password, I would have sold that Bitcoin for $100 a coin.
And did you hire somebody to crack it?
I'd say I have $800. No, my son wants me to send it to some...
Because they can crack... A lot of that encryption is weak, and it can be cracked.
It's not weak. It's the Bitcoin...
You got the good encryption.
I got the Bitcoin wallet, and it's strong encryption.
See that feeling you have? That's what he has. He's loaded off. That's what you're going to have about NFTs later. It's a scam. I'm not saying it's not a scam, but I'm saying you could have been in on the scam
you're
and
agreeing.
Got some money.
Yeah, because it's a pyramid scheme. If you get in early...
Yeah.
This is America.
Yeah.
I sell NFTs. I'll be selling more NFTs. It's a thing to do. Some people like it. You know, sometimes you give stuff away for free. America. It's what we do.
I have a friend who had their kid made a thing that he posted on Twitter that became like a meme for a long time. Hmm. And I said, you should get that made as an NFT. He says, yeah, but they're stupid. I said, yes, they are stupid. But if somebody will pay you for something like that has no value, take the money.
Yeah, but see, I won't even do it because I feel like, I mean, we could sell NFTs. Trey said, you should sell your bloopers as NFTs. But I'm not, I'd feel guilty doing that. Yeah.
And give them away.
Give them away?
Yeah, make NFTs and give them to your...
Well, what's the point of that?
Give them to your Discord holders. The same reason you sell bricks with somebody signing their name.
But that was different. We built a studio out of that.
It's different to you, but it's not different. It's symbolism. People who have never come to this building and have never actually touched their
brick still want
to have their name on here. Yeah. So if you made NFTs and said, I'm only giving it to my Discord members and holders, and they can have the value of that, to them it holds value. To them it means something. To them they're part of Twit. And yes, I'm convincing you. And Lisa, we're going shopping with the black car because we all need ultras except for him because he does not deserve it. Getting on my nerves with these things, Uncle Leo. We're going to do it.
New California bill. It's not a law, but it's proposed. Let parents sue social media companies for addicting kids. I think this is probably based on the Texas abortion law where, like, we can't enforce anything, so let people sue, and that'll do it. This is from Buffy Wicks of Oakland. She's co-sponsor of a bill that would obligate social media companies to not addict child users. I don't know how you do that. Nah. And if failing that, parents can sue. It's Assembly Bill.
Well, I suppose
you
could always put a banner at the top saying, your mum and dad really like this site. That would do it.
It worked for Facebook. Assembly Bill 2408, it's known as the Social Media Platform Duty to Children Act.
How do I acknowledge or evaluate or sustain the fact that my child's addicted? Who is going to pay for the suit. And secondly, this reminds me of like the 80s when they ran over CDs and music.
Yeah. It's a little Tipper Gore
video game.
Here, right?
Is like, I'm like, wait, what are we doing? It's Two Live Crew. Okay, so your kids are listening to it and they're what? They're singing songs? They're
playing, it does sound like, kind of...
What are we doing?
The presumption is that social media companies are attempting to addict people and could do something to prevent it. In fact, there's a safe harbor provision that would protect responsible social media platforms from being penalized if they, quote, took basic steps to avoid addicting children.
Can I start suing
be
parents?
Be less fun?
Can I sue bad parents?
I wish.
Can I sue you for not keeping your kid under control in the CVS and he's throwing M&Ms at the back of my head? Can I sue you?
Yes, you can. You can sue people for anything. If you want.
This is America, land of the lawsuit.
Yeah.
America. I don't know.
It does.
Pay attention to your kids.
It could pass. Yeah. It could pass. I mean, you never know. Any day, any given Sunday, these things could pass.
Love your kids. Pay attention to them. Take the phones away from them before they're big enough to beat you up when you try.
Teach your children well. Let's take a little break. I want to tell everybody how to protect yourself online with the VPN I use, the only one I use and recommend, ExpressVPN. Going online without ExpressVPN, it's fun because these ads, every time they have some new metaphor, right? Last time it was going to the bathroom, leaving the door open. Now it's like changing your clothes while leaving your window wide open. You might not have anything to hide, but why give strangers a chance to invade your privacy? I do use ExpressVPN. When you go online without ExpressVPN, internet service providers could see what you're doing, see what websites you're visiting, and it's completely legal for them. In fact, they all do, to resell that information to marketing firms and others without your consent. And you don't know, data brokers, you don't know how that's going to be used. So that's one reason to use a good VPN. Another reason, of course, geographic restrictions that keep you from watching Doctor Who. If you have a Netflix subscription, you know you can watch Netflix in a variety of countries and they have a completely different set of shows. So if you like anime, go to Japan. Big button. You say, I want to be in Tokyo today. Suddenly you're in Tokyo and you can watch Netflix Japan. That's another good reason. Another good reason is security. If you're in an open access point now that we're starting to get out and about, you better be using a VPN to protect you. But here's the catch. Here's the catch. You got to trust the VPN because they know what you're doing. That's why you use ExpressVPN. When you push the button and you join the server is spun up in, they call it the trusted server technology, in RAM only, sandbox so it can't write. Every time the server is rebooted, everything is erased and the thing's built from scratch. They do that at least once a week. There is nothing on those servers. We know it because there have been, and you can read the news stories if you Google it, there have been countries where they don't have, you know, warrants. They just burst in, take the servers from ExpressVPN. There's nothing on them. They can't do anything with them. You need a good VPN. You need somebody that protects your privacy.
This is my VPN, so I know.
You know.
Yes.
It's phone, here's another
tablets.
Thing. It's fast, so you
computers.
Don't even... Sometimes you use a VPN, you go, oh, boy, I can't take this much longer. You can put ExpressVPN on your router, and the whole family, the whole house is protected. I know I have. They'll never say a word because they don't even know, but they're safe. That's what's important. Browse anonymously, protect yourself from hackers, and of course, eliminate geographic restrictions. It couldn't be easier. ExpressVPN has apps for phones, for laptops. You could put it on your router. You could put it on your smart TV. You could put it everywhere you are. ExpressVPN. Why would you take off your clothes with a window wide open? Why would you do that?
You wouldn't do it.
You wouldn't do it. Secure your
online. I'm not doing it.
You're not doing it. Secure your online activity by visiting expressvpn.com/twit today. expressvpn.com/twit. expressvpn.com/twit. And you can get an extra 3 months free with a 1-year package. Thank you, ExpressVPN, for protecting us online. Before we go much further, we should probably take a look at the week that was. Some fun stuff happened this week. A lot of it. Watch. So you think I should just...
I think like this. There it is.
Here's the manual. It's tiny. Okay.
Previously on Twit.
Mac Break Weekly.
So what Apple's doing is they're basically taunting Intel at this point. Intel held Apple back so significantly. And what they've been able to do in just 2-3 years now is they've been able to rapidly expand the product line, right? They now.
So now we know how big the M1 Ultra is. It's as big as the middle finger.
It's exactly right. As big as the middle finger, right?
Security now.
Russia has decided to start signing their own website certificates. And this is one of those possibly go wrong. Western certificate authorities are banned through sanctions to do business with entities inside Russia.
Yeah,
so
it's gonna be interesting
what are they going
to
do?
ICANN does about that.
This week in Google.
Marco Rubio, the senator from Florida, he picks the big issues to stay on saving time. For one thing in Congress, it's this.
Wow.
Stop changing the clock.
You know what you could do? If you don't want to change your clocks ever again, y'all, just make every clock an internet-connected clock.
It's not the actual physical act of changing the clock.
Right. I'm just saying, if that's your issue, we can solve that today.
I just don't want it to be a different time when I wake up.
The queen of IoT has spoken.
That, by the way, that bill that was kind of sprung on the Senate and they passed unanimously... I don't think it's going to get through the House because it turns out to be very controversial. Who would have thunk it?
People, yeah, they were surprised, but I think it's bad. I mean, we in California, Oregon, and Washington all have to a certain degree said they want to go to permanent daylight
saving. We had a referendum.
Mm. Yeah, because of where we are and would go altogether. Where we are positioned in the time zone, it actually kind of makes sense for us. But this law is really weird. It basically says everybody has to go to daylight saving all the time. States can't choose. And, you know, we're going to just do it. And that's weird because there are places that probably should not do that, that should choose another time zone. Why not let the states choose?
Because it would be insane.
It's already insane. Well, I have family in Indiana. There are two time zones in Indiana. Yeah, yeah. They vary by county.
Yeah.
Right? Like, it wouldn't be that bad. But, like, Michigan has a good argument to make that they should never go to daylight saving time only because they're far enough north and they're far enough west in the eastern time zone that it's a bad idea. So let them not. But this bill... nobody has a choice except for Arizona and Hawaii, who can just stay with the way they are.
Some just exempted, and the rest.
Everybody else just has to go. That's it.
What about the conspiracy theory? Man, the electricity companies want to have it dark sooner so you turn on your lights and they get more money.
Oh, good.
That's a minute. They're lobbyists that are keeping us down, man. It's the lobbyists of the electrical company.
Getting up and going to school in the dark at 8:30 a.m. is the minute that law goes away.
You try going to Scotland. I mean, Scotland.
Yeah, the more north you are, the worse it is.
Yeah.
You will get up in darkness.
In Seattle, it'll be dark at 9 in the morning in the winter. It'll still be dark, pitch black.
Yeah, but it will be light in the evening when people are coming home from work. So it's a trade-off. Morning people and night people are going to argue about it. It's a trade-off. In some places it makes sense. I think in California it does make sense, but it's just weird that this passed unanimously kind of quickly, like nobody pay attention to this, and that the way it's written is so strange where it's like, no, we're just going, everybody, now.
Well, there's still some shenanigans that have to go on, including a vote in the House, and the president has decided. I suspect it's not going to happen.
People are freaking out about the technical issue here, since this is a tech show, about, like, you have to rewrite software in order to change it. But the truth is, a lot of software these days is based on UTC offsets, and it's not a big deal. There will be a lot of, like, really crappy electronics that have it hard-coded. But the fact is, just a few years ago, we changed when the daylight saving ends.
Yes.
And there were a lot of crappy clocks that were made that didn't work anymore.
But computers,
for 2 weeks,
phones,
1999, Y2K, Jason, we can destroy the universe.
Actually, for some reason,
we can destroy
Apple
the universe.
Seems to have more trouble with the time change than anybody.
Oh,
watches crashed.
Oh yeah,
all sorts of weird things have happened in
absolutely
the past. But they're normally, all this technology, exactly as you say, the software doesn't have times hard coded in. It just knows, what time zone am I in? Okay, I'll handle it from there.
And in fact, most will have a setting of, like, what time zone are you in?
You can change it.
And if you're a device that's on a network time server, then you're gonna say, what time is it? And it's going to know what time zone you're in, and it's going to give you the correct time. Yeah.
Basically, the hardware is in UTC anyway, regardless.
Exactly.
Right? Yeah. Let's see. So, anyway, we'll see what happens. Oh, the web. What an amazing image coming back from the web. It's still not done completely with its calibration. But look at that picture.
So for people who are watching this, just to be clear, all those little spots around the star, those are galaxies, deep, deep galaxies. And this is a very limited exposure just for calibration. This thing is going to show us stuff back to the beginning of the universe that we've never seen before. And even in the calibration image of the one camera, you've got deep field galaxies back behind that star that they're using as their test subject.
You can kind of tell, if you look at the image from NASA closely, they're not little pinpoints. You can see they look like little spiral
galaxies. On Twitter, I saw an astronomer who was walking through all the little smudgy galaxies and saying, what kind of galaxy this is. And we don't have the redshift data from this image, so we don't know whether they're, like, just in the line of sight or whether they're actually, like, colliding some of them and all of that. And that'll all come later. But this is a test image.
Yeah.
All it is.
It's false color also because this is infrared. You're not...
Right, because the further back in time you go, the further into infrared you have to go because of the redshift. Yeah.
As a not bright person, can I just ask you one question? If I can see that those are galaxies, correct? Those are galaxies?
Yeah.
How come I can't look at planets and see if there's people walking around on there? Because we got satellites. You can see people walking around. I don't care about the eyes. I want you, if you can get that far, back up, hit every single planet on the way there.
If you
and I want to know who's walking
the
on the
telescope
planet.
Way far away, you could look back at us and you could see Jesus.
So, I want it. So I'm asking the question.
I got two things. First is, one of the things that's not widely known is a lot of the early space telescopes were spy telescope hardware that were given from the spy agencies to NASA, and they just turned them around and looked out at the universe. But the other thing,
Hubble was a spy telescope?
Has some spy telescope heritage. We'll put it that way.
See?
But Webb, here's the thing about Webb. You talk about seeing people walk around. Webb is not just going to look at stars far off in distant galaxies. It's also going to look at exoplanets. Mm-hmm. And one of the things they think they might be able to do is even detect atmosphere and get the substances in an atmosphere of a planet, which might tell us if there was substances that had to be created by life. So, plus, they may be able to look at other things in our solar system, other planets here, more clearly than Hubble can do. So there's lots of other stuff. They're not just looking at faraway galaxies.
Can I tell you something? That's all I ever wanted. That's all I ever needed. Say yeah.
I could care less about all the galaxies.
There you go.
I want to know what's going on. So that's great.
So
that's
good information. You might find aliens.
That excites me.
It might happen. It could happen.
Yeah. This is the first selfie from space. This is the Webb telescope selfie of itself. There you go.
I saw it being built in Goddard, and it's just an amazing.
Well, it was
instrument.
All folded up, and there was no guarantee this would
in the fairing of a rocket, and then
ultimate
unfold.
On origami.
It's truly amazing.
We're living in the future.
It's amazing technology. They've been building it for a very long time. Everybody is so relieved that it finally got out there. But it is going to. I guarantee you, as long as it continues to function like it has so far, I guarantee you. Fundamental things that we think about our universe will change because of what it finds.
What do you
it's
think?
Amazing.
Like how old it is, whether it's expanding?
Well, the most exciting thing is the stuff we don't know. Like we're going to see stuff and be like, what? And that astronomers love that because that's the thing that makes them think, oh, now we got to figure out why we're seeing this. And then they learn things about the universe.
And again, you could tell me there's no life. That's cool if you found that out. But using it in those ways that you laid out, those are practical things that I want and interest me.
There's real hope of, like, we know there's an exoplanet. It was like, okay, but is it a rock? Does it have an atmosphere? And we don't know. And they think they're going to be able to use Webb to do spectrographs of the atmosphere of exoplanets and say, this has got an oxygen, nitrogen atmosphere like Earth, or this is more like a Jupiter. And they hope to be able to do that with this.
I'm all in on it
now.
Pretty
sweet.
I'm all in. You got me. Hey. You offered me some crack cocaine, and I took it.
The optical telescope element manager at NASA's Goddard Flight Space Center said, "We said last fall we would know that the telescope is working properly when we have an image of a star that looks like a star. Now we're seeing that image, and I'm happy to say the optical performance of the telescope is absolutely phenomenal. It is working extremely well. The performance is as good, if not better, than our most optimistic prediction."
Yeah. It's summer before we'll get like official science images because they have a bunch of, this is one camera. And so they've aligned the mirror, but now they also have to align and it's so precise because these are so delicate. And it's behind their sun shield out in fairly deep space. It's at the, you know, a range point. But once they fine tune all the instruments, starting this summer, the science starts to roll.
It's the simple pro, I mean, you think it's tough, you know, upgrading a laptop or something like that. They built this thing, put it in a vibration chamber and shook it violently to simulate a launch, then took it down, rebuilt everything which failed, then did the same thing after chilling it for 3 weeks using liquid nitrogen, and then did the whole thing again. It's a marvelous
instrument.
And
then shot it into space.
Yeah.
And nobody can, it can't be fixed. It's too far away. So if anything fails, the whole billions of dollars is down the drain. And it all worked.
This is a graph from the Recording Industry Association of America. You might need the Webb telescope to see the very last bar, which is CD sales in the year 2020-21. But you may notice something.
Hey, it went up.
It went up. Went up by a lot. I mean, look, CD sales are still a fraction of the CD sales 20 years ago. But for the first time in a long time, shipments of CDs rose from 31 million in 2020 to 46 million in 2021.
No, are hipsters going to be listening to CDs like those?
Yeah, that's exactly it.
I was going to tell you, it literally is hipster CD buyers. It's the same thing as records. Records are...
Vinyl sales have been steadily increasing for a decade and a half.
Yeah. And, but they're taking up too much space. They realize they can just stack up CDs listen to this. And have the same...
So CDs,
boxes.
46 million CDs were sold last year. 39 million vinyl records were sold last year. Almost as many.
Some of that is because I've got a family member who worked at Abbey Road.
Really?
But he was saying that a lot of the vinyl stuff that they're selling now is people buying albums to put on the, you know, to get framed up and put on the wall rather than actually play them.
Listening to them.
Yeah.
It's decorative.
There's some truth, but I'm on some mailing lists for some of my favorite musical artists, and they all do a vinyl release, and it's limited editions, and it goes for the fan club, and it costs a fortune, and like, you can't. You're a touring musician. You got a mailing list. You do your tour. You sell vinyl. These are all.
You got to do it all.
And apparently, the vinyl's really cool now. Like 21st century vinyl can be like weird colors and weird patterns and stuff,
John,
that are like.
Do you buy Umphrey's really, McGee vinyl records? Yeah, you do. Yeah.
Yeah.
And
so
I bet they're all
the
like spacey. You know, yeah.
And they're collectible because they don't mass produce them, right. And so people have to get them. They're like right. NFTs that
it's
you
like
can
NFT
play
you
music.
Can hold.
It's an NFT you can hold and play.
Because it interests me just to think who is the top seller. So Adele, Taylor Swift again,
yeah.
Billie Eilish, top selling
people
CDs.
With strong fan bases.
Yes.
Yeah.
They want to you know what?
They want to physically hold it.
When you're at a concert, again, mister, you don't believe in NFTs. Music is like an NFT because you can't hold it anymore. It's digital, but it's there. But guess what? When I go to the concert and I see Billie Eilish and I want her to sign something, I can't have her sign my phone that's streaming her music. Let me hold up the CD
I used to sign autographs a couple a year. And nobody asks for autographs anymore. They just want a selfie. That's all anybody wants. Nobody wants an autograph.
Because I can hold it and it's still
a selfie.
Digital.
I don't know. Selfies. Last Billy Bragg concert I went to.
Did you get an autograph?
I got my CD autographed. And he just said, you cannot sign a digital copy.
That's true.
So, yeah, I got my T-shirt signed and I got my CD signed and I was a very happy camper.
Just waiting on you, Leo. Just waiting on you, Leo. Still
you're going to be waiting a long time. But you know what's not going to wait? Our dinner reservation. Let's get the hell out of here.
Well, let's look at the latest Umphrey's McGee album first.
Here's the Umphrey's
Asking
McGee album.
Asking for a Friend. 2LP. Cloud Lux Edition.
How much is that? $50?
$100 if you want all three of those signed pictures to come with it.
Holy cow,
look how pretty it is.
It's pretty.
In a world where all of the stuff is digital downloads, not only does it make sense for the artist, it totally makes sense if you want like a thing to show your love of the artist. You get this
object. That's what it is. It's like a T-shirt.
And that's great.
John, do you have a turntable?
I do not.
No, he doesn't have a turntable. He has all the vinyl.
You know, there's
records.
That song.
He has no way to
have
play.
Have you heard
him.
That song? It's like, I've got a record player that was made in 2015, and I'm like, that's so weird. Like 21st. I hope it's like. Is it like a USB record player?
Ooh.
What is it? I don't even know. But that's hipsters. I love it. It's warmer. It sounds warmer.
Jason Snell,
sixcolors.com.
We
spent a lot of money for that domain.
Did you?
I did.
No, really?
I did. It was like $4 or $5 grand when
I'm
I was starting the site. And I was like, I got to get it.
If so you are an Apple fan, Jason and Dan are the kings of this. And boy, lots of great articles.
We'll help you
out. Lots of information. It really is a great site. You've done a great job. And of course, how many podcasts do you do now?
A lot. A lot. The upgrade on Relay FM is a big one. Downstream, if you're interested in my thoughts about the streaming world right now.
The incomparable.
Yeah, absolutely.
Very busy man. But I'm so glad to see you.
It's great to see you. Anytime.
Really wonderful.
It's an easy drive for me, but I'm usually, it's you and me and a bunch of TVs. A bunch of avatars.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not today. We had Ian Thompson from theregister.com.
Indeed. Great to see you. Good to see you as well. It used to be more fun
to come here because we had an English food store, but that's gone.
Yeah, that has gone. In fact, a lot of the English food stores have gone to the wall.
People realize it's crap.
I think I would beg to differ with that. I know you've never got on with Marmite, but I really think you should give it a shot.
Nobody wants it.
It's food of the gods.
I'll have a scotch egg tonight. That's what we'll do.
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you for being here. Really appreciate it.
Always a pleasure.
And Owen J.J. Stone came all the way out from his undisclosed location somewhere back east. It is so nice to have you. You didn't bring Leah this time.
I did not. She's very upset with me, and she misses you guys. So next time, I guess I have to bring her.
We had a good time with her last
time.
I will say...
It's my fault that this episode happened, and I'm glad that it is my fault. If you're out there in the world, just know two things. One, the chat room here is like the best chat room in America, and the Discord is talk about NFTs you can hold, the gifts that are going on currently live during shows.
They know how to have fun, it is rocking.
I sold a post.
Yes, there we go. Post sold NFT that you can hold during the show live. It is really a great community. And if you're in that community, and if you want to be in that community, also make sure you reach out to Lisa and to Leo and to anyone that will listen and tell this man to start selling or giving away NFTs to Clubhouse holders. I want it to happen. I want it to be a thing. I want to be a champion and a king in the future. And 10 years down the line, you can look back and thank me for the $4 that you made from that NFT that you got for free for being a club member. I appreciate you. I love you. It's been a great time. Text me. Send me a message. I don't spam you. And I'm back to doing shows, too. If you like podcasts with a crazy person that rants about things, and I do a show with my kid, too. I love you. And another twit. This is in the can. Yeah.
Doing the twit. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby. Doing the twit. All right. Doing the twit, baby.